Well, it was unheard of for a sitting American president
to file a lawsuit against a news outlet. This never happened before until President Trump returned to office for a second term. But now he has sued the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and as of this morning, the BBC.
President Trump. Domestic propaganda has been the bane of your existence.
Obama repealed the 1948 Smith-Mundt Act, which then permitted propaganda to be in broadcasting. It no longer said that it had to be credible.
Inevitably, Obama's Orwellian Smith-Mundt Modernization Act will be amended or repealed. We are going on nearly 15 years of its implementation, and mainstream media has become nothing short of an enemy of the people. But you knew that. Case in point, in the heart of New York City, outside the opulent Gracie Mansion, American patriots led by J6 prisoner Jake Lang gathered to sound the alarm on the creeping Islamic influence under Mayor Zohran Mamdani's regime.
An explosive device with bolts and screws was thrown into a crowd. It happened in New York City on Saturday during a protest that turned violent outside the mayor's official residence.
New York City got extremely lucky yesterday. TATP is enormously volatile. It is not very stable. It's extremely powerful. And it is the footprint, and if you go by past events, of serious bombing attacks. The London 7-7 attacks, Richard Reid's attempt on a plane. Many of us remember the Ariana Grande attacks outside the Manchester Arena. These are situations where you're well into double figures of people killed, never mind injured.
Instead of condemning the barbaric attack, Mayor Mamdani, a self-proclaimed progressive Muslim template, doubled down on vilifying Lang as a white supremacist.
This was a vile protest rooted in white supremacy entitled Stop the Islamic Takeover of New York City. I'm the first Muslim mayor of our city. Anti-Muslim bigotry is nothing new to me, nor is it anything new for the 1 million or so Muslim New Yorkers who know this city as our home.
The mainstream media echo chamber followed suit, amplifying smears against American patriots and populism.
Authorities say they were part of a group of nearly 125 people counter-protesting a much smaller anti-Islam demonstration led by Jake Lang.
The violent
pardon U.S. Capitol insurrectionist who has frequently sought out political confrontations in the months after President Trump gave him clemency. In a statement, Mayor Zohran Mamdani is saying, quote, yesterday, white supremacist Jake Lang organized a protest outside Gracie Mansion rooted in bigotry and racism.
Obama's CIA media monstrosity uses many tools in their propaganda toolbox. One of those is called minimized framing, where certain aspects of a story, event, or issue are deliberately downplayed, underemphasized, or minimized in the framing process. This allows acts of terror, sedition, or treason to carry on toward their goal. CNN recently illustrated minimized framing in stark detail, posting about two jihadist terrorists as if their innocent lives took an unexpected turn on a lovely warm day in New York City. CNN had to redact and apologize. Another tool is outright lying.
Two Republicans say Muslims don't belong here after an attempted terror attack against New York's mayor, Zohran Mamdani, and the House Speaker, Mike Johnson, says nothing really to condemn those comments. I incorrectly said that the bombs that were thrown by ISIS-inspired suspects in New York over the weekend were directed at Mayor Mamdani. They were not. I failed to catch and correct that mistake in real time, and I take full responsibility for that.
This blatant bias exposes the deep state's playbook. Protect the invaders, demonize the defenders, all while sleeper cells activate across the homeland, plotting the next 9/11-style horror in real time.
In Michigan, at the synagogue about 25 miles away from the big Islamic headquarters there in Dearborn, where the politicians openly chant death to America, death to Trump, death to the U.S. military, death to Israel, we have reportedly him crashing a vehicle.
All right, folks, that is the latest from John Bound. Find and share it on band.video. The media's minimized framing leads to maximum danger. We'll be right back on the other side of the Daily Dispatch.
You have the widest selection of Patriot apparel and some of the best designs. I shut out when our sponsor said, what do you want? I said, with the widest selection of t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters, hats, you name it. I want classic Americana stuff. I want pro-Trump stuff. I want InfoWars stuff. I want comedy stuff. Christian, Crusader, pro-life, pro-Jesus, classic 1776 stuff, quality Leering Center, you know, joke stuff, classic InfoWars gear. It's all there. I mean, just cool shirts saying, I love America with a German pointer on it. I mean, just good stuff. All sorts of resistance to tyrants is obedience to God Punisher shirts. I mean, there are some kick-ass stuff there. Look at that one, American Supply Co. I designed that bad baby. America established 1776 Supply Company. Woo! I like it. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Watching the War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Friday the 13th. Glad you're here with us today. We have a very big show. In the third hour, we will be joined by James Fishback, who, of course, is running for the governorship of Florida and is making some very big waves and making some very impressive gains against the establishment Republican he is challenging. Well, let's begin today, as we do every day, with our daily dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your daily dispatch for Friday, the 13th of March, 6. Pentagon confirms all six crew dead as pro-Iranian Iraqi militants claim they downed U.S. refueling plane. The Pentagon has just confirmed two additional deaths in Thursday's downing of KC-135 refueling tanker aircraft over western Iraq. This brings the total deaths up to six in the incident, which marks the single deadliest aerial event for the U.S. in side of the war. The Pentagon further reiterated its stance that it was not enemy or friendly fire. The overnight confirmation of a U.S. KC-135 that went down over western Iraq marks the single deadliest aerial incident suffered by the United States since the start of Operation Epic Fury. A Friday morning Pentagon briefing has confirmed that four of the six crew members on board have died as rescue efforts for the other two service members continue. But, of course, those two service members have also now been confirmed dead, making it a no-survivor situation, unfortunately, bringing the number of confirmed admitted dead in the Iran war up to the double digits. The Financial Times reports that the Iran war is draining years worth of U.S. weapons supplies. The opening phases of the Trump administration's military campaign against Iran is already revealing the staggering financial and logistical demands of modern warfare. In just a matter of days, the conflict has consumed vast quantities of advanced weapons and billions of dollars in military resources. According to a new report published by the Financial Times and other outlets, American forces have already burned through stockpiles of critical munitions that would normally last for years. Officials say the pace of weapon usage is raising serious questions inside Washington about the long-term sustainability of the campaign. Okay, well, It's not sustainable long term. So there you go. Problem solved. You have to end it pretty soon, actually, for like a whole number of reasons. But yeah, the lack of weaponry is probably the biggest one. Meanwhile, Old Dominion shooter was released from prison early after completing a drug treatment program. So, of course, there was a shooting at Old Dominion University in Virginia yesterday, as well as the attack on the synagogue. We're getting more information about both of these events. Muhammad Baylor Jola, who had previously served time for attempting to assist the Islamic State group, carried out the shooting at Old Dominion University in Virginia on Thursday. ROT students subdued and killed him after he opened fire inside a classroom. The attack left one person dead and two others injured, prompting scrutiny over why this despicable murderer had been released from prison in the terms under which he was freed, given his earlier convictions for supporting a terrorist organization. He'd pled guilty in 2016 to providing material support to the Islamic State group and was sentenced in 2017 to 11 years in federal prison with credit for time served dating back to his July 16th, 2016 arrest. He was released from federal custody on July 23rd, December 23rd, 2024, far earlier than expected after reportedly completing a drug treatment program that can reduce prison sentences for up to a year, although inmates convicted of terrorism-related offenses are generally not eligible for such reductions. I don't even understand. I guess he had drug problems on top of it, but that doesn't make any sense. You get convicted for providing material support to a terrorist group, and so you have to take a drug treatment program? What? Okay. Vance was, quote, skeptical voice in White House on Iran strikes. I say, doubtfully. I say, thoroughly unconvinced of the assertion. This is from Politico. White House officials revealed that the vice president had made his opposition known in the lead up. This is literally the opposite of what was said earlier. Previously, in the first week of the attack, it was reported that J.D. Vance had said, I mean, the feeling I got, the impression I got was that Vance was like, well, I wasn't for the attack, but if we're going to attack Iran, we got to hit them hard and make it really big and, you know, not just like a little one-time, one-off thing like we did last summer. So it was reported that he was the voice saying, we're going to hit them, we got to hit them hard. But now they're backing off of that. And I wonder if this has anything to do with the fact that the current Iran war is completely tanking J.D. Vance's future political prospects. I don't know. I just don't think it's going to help. I don't think you should have gone harder earlier, I think, J.D. You should have been against it from the beginning and vocally, but it's a little too little too late, I think. Finally, suspect in Michigan synagogue attack had lost his family in Israel in Israeli strike on Lebanon. The armed suspect, who drove a vehicle into the hallway of a large Michigan synagogue complex that includes a school, had just lost four family members in an Israeli airstrike in his native Lebanon just last week, an official said on Friday. A potential mass casualty event was averted when security guards already in place of Temple Israel in West Bloomfield Township on the outskirts of Detroit killed the driver before any harm could come to the synagogue staff, teachers, and the 140 children at the early childhood center there on Thursday afternoon. The suspect was later named by authorities as Ayman Muhammad Ghazali, 41, who was born in Lebanon and become a naturalized U.S. citizen. The FBI, which is leading the investigation, described the attack as one of the nation's largest reform synagogues as an act of violence targeting the Jewish community. Photographs of an FBI raid on Ghazali's reported residence in Dearborn Heights, a Detroit suburb with a large Lebanese community, appeared on the website of the New York Post on Friday. Ghazali had come to the U.S. in 2011 on a family-related visa as the spouse of a U.S. citizen and was granted U.S. citizenship in 2016, according to the Department of Homeland Security. The New York Times reported Friday that Ghazali had a job at Hamido, a Mediterranean food restaurant. An Israeli airstrike killed four people in the eastern Lebanon town of Mashgara on the 5th of March. Lebanon's state agency and the Lebanese health ministry reported a woman was also wounded. So apparently this guy learned that two brothers, a niece and a nephew, were all killed at their home by an Israeli airstrike on the 5th of March, and apparently decided to take revenge on the Jewish community here in America. Not exactly a unexpected consequence. Obviously the opposite of helpful. If you want to actually contribute to the war efforts in Israel, you should do exactly what this guy did, obviously. Because there's nothing will unify America behind going after Iran like, you know, Iranian supporters murdering innocent people here in America, or at least attempting to. There are a few suspicious things about that attack that we can get into, including an FBI training for that exact event that occurred just last month. But, of course, nobody except for the attacker was killed. And so we can be thankful for that. But again, it's like, I don't know what they expected to happen. You literally brought over like millions and millions of pretty hardcore Islamists into this country. So when you do that, you are really setting yourself up for failure. You have imported, deliberately established the stay behind networks that will wage war against us. And, you know, even if it's not like stay behind networks, even if it's not, you know, people from Iran or Hezbollah that were sent here and have, you know, orders to look for an alert and then, you know, go out and destroy. on some sort of, you know, wider scale plan, you also just have Muslims that just won't fight for America. I just won't ever actually take up arms for America. They would be much more likely to fight against America. And they'll be the first to tell you that. We got a lot of videos from the last few days when it comes to the war in Iran. Let's start with clip number 5 here. This is Pete Hegseth. He gave a press conference today. There have been some pretty interesting clips out of it. Let's go to this first. Clip number 5. Here's Pete Hegseth earlier today.
Prohibiting transit in the Straits right now is Iran shooting at shipping. It is open for transit should Iran not do that.
Okay, so there you go. The Strait of Hormuz is open for transit. It's just that, you know, Iran will fire missiles at you. But other than that, it's totally open. There are no threats going through the Strait of Hormuz, except, of course, for the Iranian missiles. But, you know, if they stop shooting those, then it's open. So we can just consider it open. Of course. Little caveat there. There are the missiles. But other than that, I'm not kidding. Let's play that again because I think we missed the first part. Let's play that same clip because it's short. Here's Pete Hegseth saying the Strait of Hormuz is safe, you know, except for the missiles. Let's watch.
The only thing prohibiting transit in the Straits right now is Iran shooting at shipping. It is open for transit should Iran not do that.
Okay. Yeah, okay, great. And I guess the point he's making is that there's no mines. Okay, I guess. Great. Good point. So again, it's just like what? Nothing about this makes any sense. And it just is honestly only getting worse. Let's go to clip number 16. This is also from the press conference earlier today. Pete Hegseth being asked about how many Americans have been injured or killed so far in the 2 weeks since this utterly, utterly retarded war got started. Let's watch.
No doubt. Yeah, right there. Green jacket.
Mike Bress with the Washington Examiner. How many American casualties have there been, and where were the American service members when they were injured?
I mean, it's a bunch of return to duty. So we've had a whole, the large majority have gone in for some medical treatment and returned to duty. We've had in Kuwait, Jordan, down across the southern flank a little bit, a variety of places, most from one-way attack strikes.
But I want to clarify that. I think what we've
and
tried
Saudi
to do
Arabia.
Here
yeah,
somebody is clarify Saudi those Arabia numbers too. Rather than saying KIA or WIA, wounded. Be more clear about that because the overwhelming majority, almost 90%.
Okay, so no answers there. That's not great. That sure isn't great. Let's go to clip 28 here. This is, again, from Pete Hegseth. This time, instead of not giving any information, probably giving a little bit too much. Let's watch.
Or more fake news from CNN. Reports that the Trump administration underestimated the Iran war's impact on the Strait of Hormuz. Patently ridiculous, of course. For decades, Iran has threatened shipping in the Strait of Hormuz. This is always what they do, hold the Strait hostage. CNN doesn't think we thought of that. It's a fundamentally unserious report. The sooner David Ellison takes over that network, the better.
Okay, a couple things here. All right, we'll work backwards, right? At the very end there, can't wait till David Ellison takes it over. That's Larry Ellison's son. That's the family that's systematically with, obviously, the cooperation here admitted of the U.S. government to buy up all of the media outlets so that they, I guess, can stop reporting things that are negative about the war effort. Because let's not get confused here. A lot of people are saying, you know, because they can't wait till CNN is owned by the conservatives so they can censor it. This has nothing to do with conservatives. This has nothing to do with Republicans. CBS just got given this treatment, essentially forced to be sold to Larry Ellison and his son and handed off to Barry Weiss. And since then, CBS has become extremely positive on Israel, but is running all of the same woke, far leftist nonsense that they were before. This has nothing to do with American conservatism. So yeah, CNN. So what did they report? That the Trump administration hadn't thought of the fact that Iran was going to close the Strait of Hormuz. And he says that's ridiculous. It's one of these things where the truth is so ridiculous, they use it as a defense. You know what I mean? And again, you see this a lot if you watch, like, you know, true crime stuff. And there's actually a term for it. I don't know the term for it, but there's like an official, you know, psychological, deception detective type, word for it. I'm getting distracted by these cool images of these awesome, planes that we're sending off to, what is it, bomb elementary schools? Sorry, I forget that we have these incredible machines flying these awesome airplanes. Yeah, I don't think they thought about the Strait of Hormuz. I don't think that they had a plan for it. My evidence of that is that the Strait of Hormuz is closed and there's no boats going through and the Trump administration is saying it's safe except for the missiles being fired. And reportedly, Iran is mining the Strait of Hormuz, although there's debate as to whether that's happening. Regardless, the one thing we do know is that the Navy is talking about escorting tankers through, but that hasn't happened yet. So what do you mean you thought of it? What do you mean that you, like, did you have a contingency plan? If so, where is it? No, I don't think you thought of this. And I think we're in a situation where the war is being fought so badly. It's being waged with so little consideration for ultimate end goals. Each, like, daily update is so devastating to the American war effort that you basically can just point to reality and go, that's ridiculous. And that's sort of the argument. So, like, with true crime stuff, it'll be, you know, you think I just broke into someone's house and murdered them? I was just walking home one day and I decided there's somebody to murder and I just went and murdered them. And it's like, no, you're on video doing exactly that. But it's like, you just say what actually happened in such a way that's like, are you kidding? That's ridiculous. But it's like, no, you guys, I know. No, it is ridiculous. Don't get me wrong. It is absolutely outrageous. It is ridiculous. I also think it happens to be true that the American war planners did not plan for the Strait of Hormuz being shut down. I don't know. They've got no solution to it. They've got no backup plan. The way they're responding to it seems haphazard and patchwork and incompetent. So I don't know. You can call CNN ridiculous for speculating that, but it's also what, you know, the officials are saying and the experts watching the activity are reading from the situation. So it may be calm down, Hegseth. Maybe you need to calm down a little bit. Do we have any more clips from that? I mean, it's just a ridiculous press conference the whole way around. The whole thing's ridiculous. I mean, the press conferences are ridiculous. The news coverage is ridiculous. I know I'm sure we're all feeling this where it's just like, where are we? What universe is this? Did we not go through the last 20 years of ridiculous war? And how are we stuck in this Truman Show, Groundhog's Day, Twilight Zone, dystopian, hellish fantasy? We're just doing the same damn thing over again, except this time even worse. It's crazy. Go to clip 34 here. This is Fox News doing what they do best, pretending to be patriots while cheering on the absolute destruction of our entire system by cheering on war overseas with no points, no goals, and no possibility of victory. Let's go to clip 34.
U.S. intelligence believe the Iranians squirreled away what's left of their uranium into what's known as Pickaxe Mountain, a nearly impenetrable bunker buried deep in granite where evil scientists have been working around the clock, cobbling back together a program that was obliterated during Operation Midnight Hammer. The bunker busters might not be able to do the trick. Reports say special forces might have to be inserted to physically shut it down on the ground.
Oh, we might have to have boots on the ground. Okay. But for a limited thing, right? Just for this one sort of attack, and it's not going to spiral out from there, right? Let us get our foot in the door. Okay. Look, all we're asking is a foot in the door, a 1 foot, you know, what's the risk with just 1 foot in the door? It's just, you know, what's the big deal that it will quickly spiral out into many thousands of Americans in there? If anything were to happen during the assault on the nuclear site, there would automatically require a rescue mission that itself could get bogged down, that attempting to do something like this almost guarantees some level of complication and operational failure that will necessitate a spiraling out of the conflict. let's leave them alone. How about we, instead of doing all of that, let's not do any of it and let's go home. What if we just do that instead? I don't know. I'm just spitballing here, just speculating a possible, you know, things we could do from here on out. And how about literally anything else? Now, there is some other interesting speculation. We played you two videos yesterday of Benjamin Netanyahu that were very different than other Netanyahu videos that have come before. In particular, the fact that he is, for one thing, actually admitting and acknowledging the fact that the war that's currently being fought is in an effort to bring about the apocalypse and their so-called Messiah, which Christians would consider the Antichrist. Okay, so he's talked about Amalek before, but, and he's hinted that this was the thing, but it's, he's never said, you know, we're bringing the kingdom and the Messiah is almost here before. He also said Israel is building the, or is becoming a, you know, world power, just like we told you was always the intention behind attacking Iran. But people know something else that was strange about it. They noticed that he has six fingers. They noticed that at certain frames in that video, he appears to have more fingers than a non-AI human typically has. This, on top of other facts that it's debatable whether he or Ben-Gavir have been seen in the last couple days, it has people speculating that Netanyahu may be dead. And actually, as part of that, clip number 48 here. I'm not sure if we have time to go to the full thing. We'll come back to it if we have to. Let's go to clip 48, because this is Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent. He was being interviewed when he got called away, rushed away by Trump. Clip 48. And basically people are, he comes back and he sounds a little different. And again, whether, you know, people are, I mean, it's a little bit of a, you know, stretch there. But people are speculating about what exactly, what news was delivered to Scott Bessent that required they interrupt a interview. What caused him to be so uncertain when he got back. And of course, people are just sort of connecting these dots and saying maybe this was Scott Bessent being told something terrible had gone wrong in the war. And that very well could be that Netanyahu is either dead or other rumors have him injured and in need of organ transplants. These are all just rumors that are, as far as I can tell, baseless. But here's the bizarre interview with Scott Bessent that has some people questioning what news he got. Let's watch.
I listened to you on the...
The president wants you. Sorry, the president wants you very much.
Oh, okay. Okay. No problem at all. See you shortly, Mr. Secretary.
You can work that in.
Mr. Secretary, I have to say, it's a first, I'm sure a last as well, that an interviewee's been pulled away to go to the Situation Room. How was the president? Was he stressed?
No, the president is in great spirits. The Iranian mission is proceeding well ahead of schedule. And you know, I have to tell you, Wolf, that I have a teenager who's considering military service. And I could give this team my highest compliment, from President Trump to the head of the Joint Chiefs to the Secretary of War. I would say that I would trust my child's life in their hands.
Very reassuring, Scott. Very reassuring. You sound so confident. So he got pulled away at 10:30. He didn't come back till afternoon. He got pulled for an hour and a half, and he's like, it was going great.
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs.
starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15-20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke, in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. Now, I've been telling you this for decades. So they have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research. The human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer when they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document the potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. We've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation. Total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect. But it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our Ultra Methylene Blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Special guest in the next hour. We will be joined by James Fishback in the third hour. He will be joining us to talk about the great state of Florida and his astonishing rise in popularity. Not astonishing to those of us who have been paying attention, but certainly to the establishment who are throwing everything at him that they can, and it's just not working, unfortunately, for them. Fortunately for the people of America and freedom lovers throughout the globe. Let's get a few more videos about the state of the Iranian war, and then I want to move on to some related but not exact topics, because to be honest with you, it's the same as it keeps. I mean, the war aims are just as ridiculous as they were yesterday. The statements being made by the Trump administration are just as silly and contradictory as yesterday. It's all just the same. So no development, to speak of one way or the other, it seems like. America's declaring victory and losing, and Iran is continuing to fight and dug in and not going anywhere. So until that situation changes, not sure how many times we can go over it and over it and over. But let's go to clip number 29 here, because this is Stephen Miller. Again, love the guy, but, when you go to war with Iran, it makes you say some silly stuff on TV. Let's go to clip 29 now.
Mr. Miller, tell us about the progress of Operation Epic Fury.
Well, I think it's important for your viewers, Jesse, and the American people to know that there's never in history been a more total asymmetric one-sided annihilation of the enemy than you are witnessing that is unfolding right now in Iran. Iran has long been feared by all the nations of the Middle East. It's long been believed to be one of the great military powers of the region, and yet the United States, under President Trump's leadership, has annihilated their navy, has annihilated their missile capabilities, has dealt devastating strikes to the IRGC and their command structure, has taken out, in collaboration and coordination with Israel, their nation's sinister leadership and command structure. It has been a complete wipeout of their capacity to unleash violence on the world. And
but that's just not true, though, is it, though? I mean, none of it really was true. I mean, some of the things they claimed were true, but the implications he was making weren't. Like, yeah, okay, we did kill the Iranian leadership, but that doesn't mean the Iranians are now without leadership. They just got new leaders. Okay, yeah, we took out a bunch of the IRGC guys, but they have a pretty hefty backbench to draw from. So those aren't exactly like, you know, victory conditions that we've achieved. They don't have a navy, but okay, they're using missiles. He says we've degraded their ability to, you know, fire the missiles, but why was Central Tel Aviv being bombarded last night? By whom and with what? I mean, what is he talking about? And he starts off by saying there has never been a more asymmetric victory, which it's like, I don't remember $11 billion of radar stations being destroyed in the first wave of either Iraq war. I mean, hell, say what you want about the purpose of the first couple of Gulf Wars. But the first Gulf War, at least, like, they had a hardcore plan. They went in. They did it, and they hit them powerful. I mean, you want to look at, like, what a real, you know, successful operation looks like. First Gulf War, I mean, we took out Iraq. I think we lost 86 guys total, the entire thing. That's because for months ahead of time, the generals were getting together and making a plan and getting all the pieces in place, and then it was a giant, you know, swarm attack. But regardless, it's like to then claim that this attack in the last two weeks when we have lost all of our major radar stations, we're like totally blind. They're hitting Tel Aviv on a nightly basis. Like, what are you talking about? What are you talking? You're just lying. Okay. Sorry. I answered it. They're lying is what's happening. So God help us. We are now in a situation where Americans, if we want even the, you know, barest semblance of truth, we have to go to foreign outlets. And I, you know, I don't even know if we can trust these people, but I certainly trust them more than the Americans. Let's go to clip 24 here. This is a Russian ambassador talking about the Gulf states and their reaction to Iran. Let's watch clip 24 here.
Iran's concerns, security concerns, as well as concerns of all the states, including the neighboring countries, is of utmost importance. They have the right for security. Israel has the right to security. The Gulf states have the right to security. Lebanon has the right to security, but it is not being observed. You know that U.S. recently confessed that they planned that operation while they were negotiating with Iran, and Iran was doing that in good faith. Israel recently confessed that they were planning together with the U.S. To start this operation 2 or 3 months before it started, which means that these negotiations were just a
smokescreen is what he's going to say. So again, it's like, yeah, just, we're ruining our reputation overseas. We are betraying confidences. Like, we're just burning it all down for nothing, for absolutely nothing. And it's just insane. So again, and I don't know, the Europeans do this. The new American elite do this. I don't get it. They think they're being clever, I guess. You remember, I think it was Angela Merkel or another German politician who bragged about the fact that they were using the Minsk Accord to basically lull Russia into a false sense of security. They never intended to uphold it, and they later came out and said, oh, we considered that just it gave us some breathing room so we could arm ourselves. We always intended to attack. It's just like, you're not supposed to admit that. I don't know. They think it's like clever. They think people will be like, oh man, wow, they're so clever. They're so sneaky the way they did that. It's like, no, you're just, anybody can do that. That's not like a clever thing. That's not like a unique, intelligent thing to do. Everybody can lie. It's not hard. Everybody can make, you know, international agreements and never intend to follow through with them. You're not being clever. You're just destroying the fabric of international relationships and the possibility even for diplomatic solutions in the future. You absolute psychotic moron. So they just do this over and over. So they come out and go, yeah, you know, we were negotiating with Iran, but we'd actually been planning this attack the whole time. And like, it was actually integral to it because the meeting that we bombed was happening because we'd made some big, you know, suggestion to them. So it's like we actually manipulated the negotiations on purpose because we knew that, okay, if we make this big, ask, then they'll have to get together to talk about it. And when they get together to talk about it, we'll bomb them. You got our enemies around the globe, like Russia, going, yeah, these are the bad guys. Like, this is how you determine who's at fault for the start of the war. It's who goes out there and admits it, brags about it like it was a cool, clever thing to do. You absolute psychos. It really is beyond anything you can imagine. I mean, this would be amateurish if this was a level of like stuff going on in preschool. These are the people running the United States of America. It's crazy. Clip 27 here. U.S. and Israel's blitzkrieg failed and the Iranian regime is only getting stronger. Let's watch.
Look, we don't know what will happen. The blitzkrieg failed. The Iranian regime, as they call it, didn't collapse. The people didn't revolt against it. Looks like there is no exit strategy for the U.S. In this game. I'm not a fortune teller, but the situation is really dire, and we are calling for the political and diplomatic solution. And those who are opposing it, and by the de facto they did it when they voted, they didn't vote in favor of our resolution, means that they bear responsibility.
Again, it's just ridiculous for the Trump administration to pretend it's anything other than what it just is obviously happening to everybody. Yeah, the Trump administration out there like, we're winning, we're kicking butt, we have very, you know, easy to achieve goals and we will be achieving them. Meanwhile, everybody else paying attention, including the ministers of other governments, are just like, they tried to knock out the Iran regime, it didn't work, now they don't know what the hell to do, they can't, you know, open up the Strait of Hormuz, they can't negotiate because they keep killing the people they're supposed to be negotiating with. I mean, we're just screwed. Everybody knows it, including the Trump administration, who is just desperately at this point trying to figure out how they get out of this with the least amount of damage done. It's like, it's too late, y'all. It's too late. By the way, the Iranian leadership was out having a big parade with all of the Iranian civilians. They're getting bombed in the middle of the parade, and none of them run away. They all are just there on the street being bombed. It's crazy. This guy doesn't even stop his interview. Clip 23 here. This is the head of Iran's judiciary. I guess this is like the, you know, John Roberts. This is the, you know, Supreme Court justice of Iran giving an interview during this, I guess, Quds Day is the Iranian holiday. Let's bring up the audio here. Boom, there's the explosion. So the gathering just got bombed. He's saying the people of this country are not afraid. The people of this country are not afraid. He stays in the street and continues the interview as he's being bombed. Let's go to clip 22 here, just before. This is the same. This is the bomb that went off, just from a different angle. We'll go clip 22 here. Again, this is the Quds Day march. And they're just out there, like, they're being bombed. You can see in the beginning, and here it pans back, and you see the smoke rising from where the bomb hit. They aren't even fleeing. Like, hello, do you see what I see? Are you looking at what I'm looking at? They're waving the Iranian flag. They're in the street with their fists in the air while being airstruck. Oh, but they're about to collapse, aren't they? Just kill a couple more of them, Trump. I'm sure they'll all come over to your side. I'm sure they're all just, you know, waiting to embrace the red, white, and blue. All these poor, you know, these poor people kept under the thumb of tyranny. It's like they're all literally out risking their lives just to show their support for their leadership. It's like, I don't know. Can't imagine any American leaders acting that way, behaving like that, or with the people around them supporting them like that. It's pretty incredible stuff. We're seeing some pretty incredible images out of Iran, I have to say. But of course, it's just, I'm torn because I got to show you what the administration's saying, but like, if I was just reporting this factually, just like, here's what's happening, here's what's going on, here's what people are saying, it just paints an entirely different picture, and it's just kind of exhausting having to go, here's what Pete Hegseth said, here's why it's a lie, here's what Steve Miller said, that doesn't even make sense on the face of it. It's just like, ugh, it's very annoying when we get into these ridiculous conflicts and have to lie about it, because the truth is that we're occupied by a foreign state, and that might cause Americans to get angry if they knew that. From Europa.com, U.S. war planners significantly underestimated Iran's willingness to close the Strait of Hormuz in response to U.S. military strikes while planning for war. According to multiple sources familiar with the matter who spoke to CNN, top officials within the Trump administration acknowledged to lawmakers during recent classified briefings that they did not plan for the possibility of Iran closing the Strait of Hormuz in response to strikes because they believed a closure would hurt Iran more than the United States. Do you see where the problem is? Do you see the underlying problem with everything America is doing in Iran? Do you understand that our failure in this conflict goes directly back to literally the first and in a lot of ways only important law of war from Sun Tzu? Know your enemy. It's the golden rule of war. Know your enemy, know yourself. We don't even try to understand our enemy, and you can see the consequences. Do you think Trump even can model the mindset of people that are out on a street being airstruck, waving their flag and refusing to even take shelter? Like, do you think they calculated for that? I think if they would have understood that this was who they were dealing with, maybe they would have understood that killing their supreme leader and Pope probably wasn't a good idea. Probably wouldn't have made them want to come to your side, only harden their hearts. Again, I'm saying all of this. Like, it's hard. It's hard to, like, break the habit of speaking as if America and the American politicians are working for America. Like, there's this understood, you know, kind of just established thing where it's like, America should be doing anything for America, but like, that's just not the case. And the reason I'm saying that is because it's like, they know all of this. To even say like, oh, they didn't know the Strait of Hormuz would be shut. Wow. Are they idiots? They don't understand the Iranian. Like, maybe that's the case. Maybe they genuinely were like, thought like, oh, the Iranians aren't going to slightly harm their economic prospects because of the war with us. Like, no, that's you people. No, you people value money over everything. You people make decisions like this. The Iranians are willing to sacrifice. They're okay with hurting themselves a little bit if it kills you. So you didn't take that into account. You didn't understand that. So I guess it could go either way. Either our top warfighters and the people making these decisions literally do not understand the first law of war to know your enemy. They just are treating Iranians like you don't have to take their mindset, their anything into consideration. Or they know exactly how bad this was going to go, which is why they did it in the first place. At this point, I think it's a little mix of both. I think it's a little one, a little bit of the other. I think the people getting us into the war know exactly how bad it's going to be, are doing it for that reason and with that intention. And the people prosecuting the war are being led around by the nose and are dumb. So, sucks, but there it is. It sucks, but there it is. With Iran war exit elusive, Trump aides vie to affect outcome. Okay. White House factions shape Trump's messaging. Economic team warns of oil shock. Political aides urge limited quick operation. Hawks push for sustained Iran pressure. A complex tug of war inside the White House is driving U.S. President Donald Trump shifting public statements on the course of the Iran war as aides debate when and how to declare victory even as the conflict spreads across the Middle East. They're debating when and how to declare victory, folks. Again, this is the other issue. It's like, to a certain degree, you always have to take in public opinion, especially in a system like ours. But that's always supposed to be secondary to like what the right thing is. But it's totally backwards, this administration. It's like they actually don't care about winning the war. They're actually not concerned about like the tactical or strategic reality on the ground. They are hyper concerned about how to spin it for the American people. You've got your priorities completely backwards, which is why we are where we are right now. Stop making decisions on the basis of the bad advice you're getting from your Israeli PR experts. And I want to get into that here because there's been a video that came out a little while ago. It was in the Eighth Front War with Shlomo Kramer, but it's been going viral sort of multiple times in the last few days. But what's going viral is a shorter clip. I have the longer clip, and I've actually been meaning to go over this ever since I did the Eighth Front, because this video is the blueprint. He gives you the entire blueprint, and it's pretty amazing when you actually listen to what he's saying. So I have the longer clip. I have the full 3.5-minute video here. I won't be able to get to all of it probably, but I'll get to as much of it as possible in this segment, and then we'll see what happens next hour. But let's go to clip 42 here. This is Israeli billionaire Shlomo Kramer, who's like the godfather of Israeli cybersecurity. Again, I just don't have time to fill you in on everything that we've covered on this show and elsewhere for the last couple of years, but the cyber dome, basically Israel has a very, very well-oiled operation where they are providing cybersecurity or integral in the cybersecurity systems of like every Western country, the Five Eyes countries, Germany, America, obviously. And so they are very, like, they are taking over cybersecurity for these countries. Israel is handling Germany's cybersecurity at this point, and they're ingratiating themselves more and more, and obviously doing it in big tech and elsewhere rapidly and in a strategic fashion as well. Here's Shlomo Kramer talking about what comes next. Let's watch.
Network. Shlomo Kramer, also one of the founders of Checkpoint, another big cyber company. Shlomo, it's great to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
How is AI cyber warfare shaping geopolitics right now?
So AI is going to revolutionize cyber warfare, is revolutionizing cyber warfare from critical infrastructure to the fabric of society and politics, and undermining it, giving unfair advantage to authoritarian governments against democratic countries, First Amendment type of...
That's already happening?
That's already happening. You're seeing the polarization in countries that allow for the First Amendment and protect it, which is great. And I know it's difficult to hear, but it's time to limit the First Amendment in order to protect it.
All right, hold on. We'll pause it right there. We'll be pausing and going through because we've got to go line by line. Because what he says, again, it's important. He's saying it in a very particular way. He doesn't say we have to get rid of the First Amendment. He says we have to limit the First Amendment in order to protect it. So that's the way this argument is being framed, is that unfettered free speech is dangerous and actually leads to, you know, a crushing of free speech. It could lead to totalitarian government. So in order to protect free speech, we have to limit free speech. That's the way this is being phrased. Now, we can reject it outright on that basis, but let's continue to listen. Now, he says they'll have an unfair advantage. It's a threat to critical security. So this all started with the question was, what is the role of AI in cyber warfare? And he's basically saying that AI is dangerous. Therefore, we need to limit the First Amendment in order to protect the First Amendment. That's the quote that you keep hearing. That's the way this is being framed. And he's talking about polarization, which he wants to get rid of dissident voices. It's not that complicated. Let's keep watching.
What do you mean?
I mean that we need to control the platforms, all the social platforms. We need to stack rank the authenticity of every person that expresses themselves online. and take control over what they are saying based on that ranking.
The government should control the social media.
Yeah, should do that. And we need to educate people against ICE, and government need to develop cyber defense programs that are as sophisticated as the cyber attack. Today it's a 1 to 100 ratio. And really government are not doing this today at any rate, and enterprises are left fending from themselves.
The technology is moving much faster than the political system typically can to respond
right.
to
so
it.
So you need to use technology in order to stabilize the political system, and you need to put adjustments that are perhaps not
I mean, we're at a point, though. Right. I can go on Instagram or TikTok, and frankly, it already is becoming unclear what is fake and what is real.
Exactly.
And once you eliminate that ability to discern truth from fiction, and what are you left with?
You are left with polarization of society and inner fighting, and you have to control that. And you see that already happening across the world. So this is an urgent need by the government to do that. And until then, enterprises are buying by themselves more and more cybersecurity solutions, but they can't afford all these solutions by themselves. So they are looking for ways to deliver more efficient consumption.
And I assume you have some of those ways, obviously.
Right. So, and that drives really the next generation of companies such as Wiz, CrowdStrike, Cato networks on the network that are platforms and are able to deliver this extended need for security in an affordable way for enterprises.
For enterprises,
right.
Not for governments.
Not for government, but governments need to start building their programs, and the same tools can be used also by government.
But the two leaders in AI, one is China, which obviously already is using AI to
Absolutely.
Control the population.
Yeah.
And here we're all out in a race with China. And so we're not as interested in regulation right now, certainly not at the state level, for example.
And that's a big mistake, because if China has a single narrative that protects its inner stability, and the U.S. has multiple allows for multiple narratives, it puts them in an unfair advantage that long-term is going to cost the stability of the nation. So changes must be made.
So there you go. And again, he ends it there by praising China's single narrative where only pro-China content is allowed. I figured I'd let it all go. We're going to revisit that in the first 5 minutes of the next hour and just pick it apart and point by point explain to you that he just gave you the entire blueprint that they are running at this moment. We have the blueprint of the Death Star. Now all we need is, fly our spaceships in there and blow it all to pieces. I'll explain to you on the other side. Stay with us.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up, go to the UN's own website, they admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this out, sort of put in the salt, IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world, has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger, pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue. With this water, I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel, so good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealphashield.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealphashieldstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, theobstacle.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best. And it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. And they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexshowstore.com. And I thank you for your support.
All right, welcome back, folks. So that video that we just played has been going viral with Shlomo Kramer, a Israeli cybersecurity expert, saying we have to get rid of the First Amendment in order to protect it. But he goes beyond that. He gives you the whole blueprint of the whole strategy, and he lays it out like point by point. And, you know, this is because this has been planned, and now whether he is the spokesman who's out there to, you know, give this message, or whether he's just relaying what they're working on behind the scenes. It's not really supposed to be public, but it kind of doesn't matter if it is, because what the hell are you going to do about it, right? You're going to sit there and take it, aren't you? He says, first, we need to control the platforms, right? They're doing that. Obviously, they have the the chief of the Jewish diaspora at Meta. She controls censorship over Facebook and Instagram. And of course, one of the first things she did was conflate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. So anybody speaking out against Israel was considered a hateful anti-Semite and banned from speaking. TikTok, of course, implemented the same thing as soon as they were forced to be sold by the Trump administration, obviously at the behest of the Shlomo Kramer types out there, forcing China to sell TikTok to the same conglomerate that now owns CBS. So they are getting control of the platforms. Obviously, when Elon Musk bought X, there was a giant advertiser boycott organized by the ADL and other Jewish organizations in order to get them to agree to certain algorithmic tweaks in order to silence people. So step one, control platforms. They're very much on the way for that. Then he says we need to stack rank authenticity. And all that really means is digital ID with a social credit score. Stack rank authenticity. Authenticity, are you who you say you are? Are you biometrically tied to whatever account you're using? That's digital ID. Stack ranking, judging that person's beliefs, giving them more of a platform, allowing their content to be seen by more people, or you disagree with them, or they disagree with you, or say things that are outside of the singular narrative that they want to push, then you'll be silenced. In order to, quote, take control of what they're saying. But he doesn't stop there. So control platforms, stack rank authenticity, that's digital ID and so in a sort of soft social credit score. But then he says education, which obviously there's a big push now to incorporate the, you know, Holocaust education and the pro-Israel education into our education system. He talks about how, cyber defense is key in this, and that right now all these enterprises are having to do it, but the government really should take over. So again, wanting to combine and sort of merge the big tech and government into one organization essentially controlled once again by Israel. But most importantly, his whole point is that what he says is we need to, quote, use technology to stabilize the political system. Stabilize the political system. Silence dissidents. That's what that means. To stabilize a political system, you need to silence the disagreement within that political system. You need to have only one side able to speak, only one side able to put forward their view, because if anybody contradicts them or disagrees with them, now we have instability. Now we have chaos. We have arguments. And he literally expands on that and doubles down on that claim by saying, look at China. They only allow one narrative. By which he means the narrative of China first, what's in China's interest, keeping out, you know, Western degeneracy, that sort of stuff. He's talking about total control. He's talking about total narrative control of the information flow. And that right now, China is doing a lot better than America because they have one narrative, but America has all these different narratives, all these different points of view, all these different attitudes and political outlooks. And that's dangerous. Because disagreement is instability. So we have to use all of these various tools, taking over the platforms, stack ranking authenticity. But of course, starting it early on with education and propaganda in elementary schools and middle schools and high schools and college. And this should all be done through the government under the guise of cyber defense. Because it's so dangerous, all of this inner fighting And of course, he says it's urgent. It has to be urgent because we don't have time to think about this. It's dangerous not to do this. You want people to die? We have to do it right now. Don't think about it. It's an emergency. It's urgent. All of these various narratives and points of view that disagree with me are dangerous. You need to give me the power to identify and rank people so I can silence ones I don't like. It's urgent. We have to do it now.
I'm an influencer, by the way. I'm a patriot and a journalist and a pundit and an analyst and a futurist and a father and a guy who loves God. Influencer comes from the time of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates. And influencers are people that use rhetoric without facts and reality and logic to convince dumb people. So when the globalists call you all influencers and you go, yeah, I'm an influencer. It just shows how stupid you are. Stop calling yourselves influencers. I'm a philosopher. I'm a warrior. I'm a game changer. I'm a historian. I'm a fighter. I'm a pioneer. I'm an explorer. I got red blood. It's pumping through my big heart fast. I like life and freedom and justice. I like women. I like red meat. I like guns. I like sunsets and puppy dogs. And ladies of the night, to quote Waylon Jennings.
Peeling back the layers of the day's events to reveal the core truth. War Room with Harrison Smith.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. Talking about old anti-Semitism. The plague. The plague of European DNA. Tainted by this senseless, pointless hate. Or, you know, just people criticizing the genocidal activity of a secular government. But so one and the same, right? It's basically the same. These things are basically the same. Senator Ted Cruz says, quote, Christ is king means, quote, I hate the Jews. And Jews, not Christians, are God's chosen people. Senator Ted Cruz made several bizarre statements during an interview this week, slamming Christians who write Christ is king online and asserting Jewish people are God's chosen people while Christians are not. Quote, I'm really troubled by the phrase Christ is king being used. Look, I agree with the statement Christ is king. Wow. Okay. New headline. Ted Cruz admits he hates the Jews. Am I missing something here? Hold on. Senator Ted Cruz says Christ is king means I hate the Jews. Then Ted Cruz says, quote, I agree with the statement Christ is king. Folks, Ted Cruz just said he agrees with the statement I hate the Jews. Wild. Wild. This is the thing. They try to say that the context of Christ is king makes it anti-Semitic. I don't think that is even possible. Like, what do you even mean? The phrase Christ is king in context makes it anti-Semitic. He says, although it's being used online in a way that is meant to say, screw you, Jew, it's being used in a context very directly to say, I hate Jews. It's almost an online code word. Christ is king is I hate the Jews, he said. No, Christ is king means Christ is king. Again, it's like, how much do we even need to pick this apart or like explain this? Like, it's wild. You can't just say that, I guess because Jewish people are offended by it, does that make it anti-Semitic? I don't know. I don't get it. How did it become anti-Semitic to say Christ is king? Let's see if Ted Cruz can't give us a little history lesson. We'll find out. He says, look, Jesus was a Jew, the senator went on. And by the way, the twisted theology that says Jews are Christ killers, that's been used to justify anti-Semitism, to justify persecution and murders. Okay. Cruz continued to say that Jesus chose to go to the cross and was not the Jews that killed him, but the sins of mankind. He also noted it was technically the Romans who nailed Jesus to the cross. Like, the only people who ever talk about this are the pro-Jewish people. I've literally in my entire life never heard an anti-Semite reference killing Christ as like a thing that we even, that anybody cares about, that anybody talks about, anybody predicates their anti-Semitism on. Like, what are you talking? The only time I've ever heard of it is people like Ted Cruz. I think I have another video in here of another guy being like a rabbi being like, well, the Romans actually did it, but it was the Romans that it's like, what are you talking about? Israel is bombing people on a beach that are only on the beach because they evacuated the place that Israel says they were going to bomb. What are we talking about here? Sorry, what are we talking about? Shlomo Kramer just said, I need to get rid of the First Amendment. And that he, as well as his friends like David and Larry Ellison, are using the Trump administration to systematically buy up the methods of communication in America so they can silence anybody that doesn't agree with Jewish supremacy. And Jesus died. What about the crown of thorns? What are we talking about here? It's so crazy. It's the same thing Netanyahu does. Where it's like, gee, it sure looks like Charlie Kirk was turning away from Israel. You guys were threatening him, and then he got shot in the neck in front of everybody. That's kind of suspicious, don't you think? Netanyahu's just like, in the Middle Ages, they said they were poisoning the wells. Meanwhile, they're literally poisoning wells in Palestine and bragging about it. I don't know. I don't get it. I do get it. It's because it's like you have to believe that so-called anti-Semitism, criticism of the state of Israel, they have to have you believe that it is either based on some 2,000-year-old trope that happens to be true about Jesus killing, Jews killing Jesus Christ, or that anti-Semitism is just a contagion in European DNA. Mark Levin said that yesterday on X. Yesterday on X, Mark Levin claimed that all Europeans have anti-Semitism in their DNA. We are all tainted and poisoned. That means it doesn't matter what we do. It doesn't matter what we think. It doesn't matter how hard we try not to be anti-Semitic. We are always intrinsically anti-Semitic. It doesn't matter that the Jews have lived in America since its founding, totally unencumbered, totally able to live their religious life, live their secular life. It doesn't matter. It's just that the anti-Semitism hasn't manifested and expressed itself just yet, which means it's just laying dormant, waiting for an excuse to pop up. So you understand that anti-Semitism should come with a death warrant. According to these people, that if you are anti-Semitic, that means you want to kill all Jews, that you don't want Jews to even exist. So therefore, it's self-defense to kill you. If you're anti-Semitic, it means you want all the Jews to die, which means they're right to want to kill you. And if you're European, you are anti-Semitic, even if you don't express it, even if you yourself don't believe it, it's in your DNA. And an advisor to the White House is saying that publicly. On X, Mark Levin. And we're supposed to just like think this is fine? This is crazy. It's dangerous, which is unacceptable and, by the way, irrefutable. Cruz attacked journalist Tucker Carlson for proponing the notion that the promises in the Bible that God makes to Israel are no longer valid. Well, they're not. So there it is. That's the obvious reading of the Bible to anybody with a third grade education. Just read the freaking Bible. It literally lays it out verbatim, absolutely, right? Even if somebody's not a Christian, never read the Bible, they still know stories that disprove what Ted Cruz says. You want to hear them? Raise your hand out there in the audience if you've ever heard of the Good Samaritan. What does that mean? Who's the Good Samaritan? What does Samaritan mean? Oh, the Samaritans were a people that weren't Jews? Interesting. So this was a racial thing. In other words, the parable of the Good Samaritan was Jesus Christ telling his followers that it was more important to be a good person and not be a Jew. You're a better person, even if you're not Jewish, but you behave well, than being the highest, most exalted Jew in the world who's rude and ignores the suffering of his fellow human beings. That is literally the point. Like, I don't know what other point you'd get from that story. He tells a story where the Pharisees, the high up, arrogant, highfalutin Jews who think they own the world, walk right by an injured man, walk right by a man who needs help, won't deign to, even look at them, let alone get in the dirt to help them. It's the Samaritan, the damn dirty, goyish Samaritan that actually helped the person, he's the one who should be exalted. Like, what are we talking about? So Jesus Christ himself, literally, like, his entire teaching was tearing down this, like, racialized self-importance of the Jewish people and saying that the blessing of God goes to the people that follow his rules, the rules that Jesus Christ are giving. I mean, it's just crazy. Again, just absolutely insane that these are the people that are running our country. And they believe this crap. Crazy. Really is. And of course, Karee Prejean Bowler, is learning this firsthand and, you know, to a really kind of brutal degree, as she, of course, was the Catholic woman. I didn't realize she was like Miss America at one point, or she was Miss California. That's impressive. And she interviewed with Tucker Carlson. She was on the Freedom of Religion Committee. That was, of course, just a completely Orwellian named body from the government whose purpose was, in fact, religious supremacy and a total violation of the First Amendment. Again, just inversion is the watchword of all of this stuff. Let's go to clip number 10 first. This is Karee Prejean Bowler talking to Tucker Carlson. Let's watch.
She said that there were people complaining about certain things that I was posting. And then this was the worst. She said, you know, you posted Pope Leo, what he said, and you wrote in the caption, you know, that there's suffering in Gaza and there's a genocide. You know, you really shouldn't use that language. That's when I knew this is a war. We are in an absolute war. I said, I'm a Catholic. You're telling me that I have to censor my posts of Pope Leo, the Holy Father? I can't post what he's saying, talking about the grave suffering of the Palestinians in Gaza. And she said, you also cannot talk about Zionism. So Zionism, this is her words, is their right to exist. And so when you're posting about Zionism, Carrie, you're saying that the Jews don't have a right to exist.
Huh? Mary Margaret Bush is
her name? Mary Margaret Bush is her name. She's a young woman. And I said, well, this wouldn't jeopardize my position on the commission, would it? Like, the president doesn't know about this, right? Because imagine me. I'm like, I just got appointed. I'm super excited. I'm passionate. This is like my dream job, to protect religious freedom. And now I'm being told I don't have my own. And she goes, oh, no. The president, no, don't worry about this, Carrie. This wouldn't jeopardize. So I just kept posting. Well, then I got a call from the PPO office at the White House.
May I just ask you to pause for one second? Did Mary Margaret Bush tell you who had called you an anti-Semite? That's a serious slander.
Oh, yeah.
Did she name the people saying that?
She said, I have no idea who it is.
Oh, it's just people are saying.
I think the people was Paula White. Let's just be honest. It was Paula White, I think. My personal opinion.
Okay, so now, I'm sorry to keep interrupting this amazing narrative, but for people who don't follow this, who is Paula White?
Paula White is Trump's pastor.
Okay.
That's who he picked as his pastor.
And she's a pastor? That's her official position? She's a pastor?
I don't believe women can be pastors, but
right.
Who am I? I'm just some dumb mom in California.
So is she a Christian pastor, Paula?
She's
White?
A Christian Zionist evangelical heretic, in my opinion.
Okay.
But yeah, she's Trump's, she runs the White House, the faith office, White House position. And she's on the Religious Liberty Commission with me and very involved in all things Bibi Netanyahu. And, so I got a call from.
How would you rate her authority as a Christian leader?
Oh, I don't take her serious at all. I don't think she's a Christian leader. I think she's a crazy person, honestly. Yeah. I think she's a heretic.
I think, for people who think you're throwing those terms around lightly or slandering her, I think it'd be worth going online and reading about her and watching videos of her demanding money from her congregation on film with some other Christian pastor in a foreign country. Clearly, she's got a complicated personal life and saying things that bear no resemblance at all to Christian doctrine. That I think it's fair what you're saying, I guess is my point.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, so that's how it works. That's how it goes, right? people are saying you're anti-Semitic. We're really concerned about, you know, some of the statements you're making. They're worrying some people. I think it's fine, but maybe you want to delete that stuff. You know, the quotes from the Pope, they go a little far, we think. I'm just looking out for you. I'm just here to help you, right? But this isn't going to affect anything. No, no, don't worry. Just take my advice. Meanwhile, they're just like, behind, just like, you have to fire her, Trump. This cannot be allowed in the Religious Tolerance Committee or whatever the hell it's called. It was literally a, you know, religious unification ceremony. It was a religious exclusion operation where only one religion was allowed to speak. It's just, again, beyond parody. It's beyond anything. Let's go to clip number 11 here, because this is Prejean Bowler talking about the response to just mild criticism of the Israeli state. Let's watch.
What we're getting at is if you criticize Israel, you're done for. They want to destroy you. And if you dare to speak out about Gaza.
Destroy you.
Oh, too. Yeah. They want to kill you. They want to kill you.
I got that.
Yeah. I've had some things. I'll just
Has
say
Dan
that.
Patrick rushed to your defense? Has Eric Metaxas rushed?
Oh, no. No. He's taking pride in his removal of Kerry.
So they're conflating. I mean, I would be delighted to remove politics entirely from religion. I believe strongly in separation of church and state because I don't want my faith to be corrupted by political leaders. I don't want my religion to be political. Jesus didn't spend any time talking about politics. They wanted him to come and liberate Jerusalem as a political leader. He refused and rode in on a donkey and then allowed himself to be tortured to death. So like, I'm with him. Let's take the politics out. But they're the ones who conflate Christian faith with a political agenda of Bibi Netanyahu.
Yeah. Yeah. Who Bibi is basically an atheist, I think. Right? I mean, I don't think he's a religious person at all.
Well, he doesn't keep to Mosaic law. We know that.
Yeah.
There may be, you know, who knows?
I thought your interview with Mike Huckabee was amazing, by the way.
It was
very sad though.
It was
very sad.
It was, yeah. I think he felt that way too. He's been attacking me ever since.
Yeah.
And again, you know, there's a reason why Tucker Carlson is getting heat from so many different directions, including Donald Trump himself. Because he represents a break in that, you know, singular unified narrative that they'd rather be pushing. But Prejean Bowler there makes a very important point, which is if you criticize Israel, they want to kill you. You understand what I'm saying? That there's no, like, way to criticize them, not be deemed anti-Semitic, and not therefore be committing the only sin that exists, the worst crime you can, being anti-Semitic, means you deserve death. And how many times did you see during the Gaza conflict, massacre, genocide, like every month or so, they would post some, like the IDF would post some image of like a Jewish soldier standing in a Palestinian house holding up a copy of Mein Kampf. And going, look what was found in a child's bedroom. As if that made everything else okay. That it was like, oh, you're mad that we're bombing children in their homes? Did you know that they have a book we don't like, though? So I guess it was good. I guess it was warranted. I guess they deserve to die. After all, they had Mein Kampf, so. And it's like, I genuinely don't even think the Nazis took it that far. I don't know. Maybe I need to brush up a little bit, but I'm fairly certain if somebody was discovered to have some sort of like Jewish text, I don't think their entire neighborhood was bombed to smithereens. I don't know. I could be wrong. Maybe they were that intense. But like you understand the messaging being sent when they go to a house of a family they've murdered and then hold up a book of Mein Kampf and say, see all you people who say what we're doing is evil. Now, don't you understand? They had Mein Kampf. They're anti-Semitic. They deserved to die. It's clearly the message being sent. You don't deserve to die for having a book of Mein Kampf, one of the most popular books ever sold in the 20th century. But according to them, you do. And it's It's being spread everywhere. Again, this is all part of the Eighth Front War that they're running and operating. And it's just amazing how flagrant, blatant, and inverted it all is. It would be one thing if it was like, you know, when Tucker's saying people are having their, you know, they're conflating, you know, Christianity and politics. It's like, you know, if it was a bunch of Catholics, like supporting the Vatican doing something, I can maybe understand that. But it's like the idea that Christians are treating Bibi Netanyahu's government as if it's some sort of holy manifestation that must be honored and adhered to. Again, it would be one thing if it was a Christian nation, if they were involved in a Christian. It's literally a plot of murder and chaos and brutality. And so it's just like, and this is what Christians are like crucifying each other over, not supporting the murderous regime of these antichrist psychopaths. It's beyond crazy. Let's go to clip number three here. This is ADL CEO Jonathan Greenblatt, confused at the inevitable outcome of his own decisions. Let's watch.
We are seeing Jewish people, the Jewish state, blamed for the war in the Middle East. That is wrong. It is wrong to scapegoat. It is wrong to hold Jewish people accountable for something you don't like on the other side of the planet. And we really need leaders on all sides, in politics, running for office, podcasters, to stop with the conspiracies, to stop with the accusations, and then tell us, but we oppose anti-Semitism. You don't get to say you're opposed to hate if you're trafficking in hateful conspiracy theories. Everyone needs to dial down the rhetoric, to take a step back, and to start doing something to stop this epidemic before it gets even worse.
And it's continuing all over the country right now, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, at ADL, we focus on protecting the Jewish community. We have never been busier. Like our whole.
Yeah, I know. It's like the more you get your way, the worse the situation becomes for you. Isn't that weird? Isn't that crazy how that's the case? You just go watch the Eighth Front War. At least five times you hear people in that video, and I can show you clips of Jonathan Greenblatt himself repeating the mantra, anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. Anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. They are the ones deliberately conflating Zionism with Judaism and saying if you're anti-Zionist, you're actually anti-Semitic. So literally what they're doing is if you say, hey, I don't like what Israel's doing, they say that person hates Jews. I can't believe this person is blaming all Jews for the action of Zionism. You don't even have to say Jew. You can just say I don't like Israel, and they will claim that you're conflating Zionism with Judaism because that's what they're doing. It is just kind of hilarious. It's actually kind of funny that literally it's just anti-Zionism that's rising, and yet by treating it as anti-Semitism, they are panicking and flipping out about anti-Semitism. He's like, you have to stop tracking these conspiracy theories. Genuinely, what is the conspiracy theory? Is the conspiracy that Israel exists and is waging a war in Iran, that it has outsized influence, that people like Jonathan Greenblatt, despite his constant protestations that he's American, he's not Israeli at all, goes to Israel, gives statements in front of their Congress where he routinely uses the word we to reference to Israel and what we need to be doing and where we need to be fighting and what we need to be employing to fight our battle. Nobody made you do that. I don't know what you expect, like you want to have your cake and eat it too, but you can't have it both ways. Sorry, this just isn't working anymore. I'm sort of fine with either one. I'm fine with either one. I think actually the better strategy is to agree with him and say, you know what, anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. It is, they're right. If you don't like what Israel's doing, guess what you are? Embrace it.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Now, this is all over the place. Joe Rogan talks about it, I have for years. But here it is. scientists and doctors figuring out now, the CIA knew in 62 that dewormers could reverse most cancers and didn't tell the public. That's mass murder. Here it is.
My parasite medications work against cancer cells. And it turns out that the parasites use mitochondrial substrate level phosphorylation in the tissue. And these fenbendazole kill these parasites. So I tried it on the cancer cell, and sure as hell, it targets the mitochondrial substrate and glycolysis. So we have a mechanism now why parasite medications are working. But cancer is not a parasite. All these people say, oh, cancer is a parasite. It's not a parasite. Parasites and tumors use a common metabolic pathway, and a drug that works against parasites can be very effective against cancer. And that's what we begin to see, especially under nutritional ketosis.
So to be clear, the anti-parasite drugs cut off the same mechanism in cancer, but we now know and have known that a lot of cancers from parasites, it's double good. And I don't sell that, but you can buy it online. And my medical doctor told me years ago, take this once a year as a regimen. I do. That's important information you might want to write down, folks, okay? All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN's own website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this out. Put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultramethylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Your Doc Chambers on, medical doctor, special forces colonel, army colonel. And I said, what do you think methylene blue? He goes, I've been on this in 2004. When I got blown up in Iraq, I had brain damage because it blew away the sheath that's on my nerves. So I did research and found out that they had studies going back over 100 years on methylene blue helping regrow the sheaths on your nerves and all the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at theallthefuelstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at theallthefuelstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, theallthefuelstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things. Libido, stamina, energy. It skips the oxidation process in the cells, the methylene blue. And iodine works very similarly, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at theallthefuelstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Again, everything the Trump administration is telling us about the war in Iran seems contradicted by basic observation, as well as the reports from people in the know. From Bloomberg, Iran missile launcher arsenal holds steady despite deeper strikes. The number of Iranian missile launchers has held steady after a week of unrelenting airstrikes, according to Israeli and Western estimates, indicating the difficulty of finding small mobile targets without having complete control of the skies. IDF officials said Thursday that two-thirds of the Islamic Republic's launchers had been destroyed. That's little change from the 60% reported last week. Two Western estimates on Thursday also put the number of destroyed launchers at 60%, with one adding that as much as 80% of Iran's total offensive capability had been destroyed. But again, if they don't put boots on the ground, it doesn't matter. It does not matter. Pentagon sends Marine Expedition Unit to Middle East. Oil spikes on ground war fears. And we also have troops as well as defensive battery systems like the THAAD being moved from East Asia to the Middle East, as it does look inevitably, like this, will expand into a wider conflict with boots on the ground. And, of course, to facilitate this and allow it to continue and keep the lid on things here in America while they deliberately lead our country towards total destruction and, at the very least, a massive, massive expenditure of resources and even human lives for the benefit of Israel, a genocidal foreign state at constant war with the world. So that's where we're at. And the important thing to understand, I think, for us is that they don't care how popular this war is. They are not trying to win the war. They are not trying to convince you that the war is worth winning. Their concern is basically just keeping the temperature below boiling. As long as they can do that, then they're good. As long as the American people aren't rising up to drag them out of their beds to tar and feather them or taking over Washington, D.C. in an Occupy Wall Street-style sit-in, bringing the entire nation to a grinding halt until we can, you know, get the war stopped. Like, as long as we are passive and not active, as long as we are complaining and not taking action, then they are winning. Okay? You understand? They are winning right now. We are on the trajectory. We are on the rails. And as long as we stay on those rails, they will win. It doesn't matter if 90% of the American people don't want something. They're doing it anyway. It doesn't matter if it's a suicidal endeavor that has no chance of victory. They don't care about victory, and they're going to do it anyway. Just so you know. And the worst thing that could happen is, you know, the voters rebel and simply vote for somebody else, and that's perfectly in line with everything else that the powers that be want. They want the Republican Party destroyed. They don't want a sizable, powerful America First Republican Party that actually stands on tradition and constitutional rights and traditional values. They don't want that. So this is win, 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 win. Said it a million times before. They took over the Republican Party to take America to war against Iran. And in the effort, they will destroy both America and the Republican Party. And that's fine with them. Because what happens? You start the war with the Republican Party. The Democrats sweep in because it's so unpopular, so horrific, so retarded that we lose astronomically. Nothing else Trump wants gets done. They open the border. They give citizenship to everybody that got here before. America's destroyed totally. They either withdraw from the Middle East and leave it a chaotic mess, or they double down and stay in because the Democrats aren't so different than the Republicans really when it comes to these types of topics. So it's all going extremely well for them. You can just follow this line of logic and do it yourself if you want. But it's very important to understand that, like, you know, not getting votes is not a concern to the people making these decisions. They don't care if the Republicans, they want the Republicans to be out of office. They don't care. So that's not a punishment that's going to make them change their mind. It's going to alter their incentives against what they are now. People are just like, they're like, and I guess I am too, just because of the scale, but they're shocked. People are shocked at the, like, stupidity of America doing this, how we're going to lose, and how, like, politically unpopular it is. And again, it's shocking because it's so much. Like, it's like so bad. The scale of it is shocking. But it shouldn't be shocking because they don't care about the Republican Party. They don't care about America. They don't want America to win the war. So it's actually not shocking at all. It's not surprising. It's not a mistake they're making, is the point that I'm saying. It's just like, It's like being shocked that all of the immigrants are on welfare. It's like, what? I thought the immigrants were supposed to work and to fill up the pensions. I thought the whole reason we were getting them was because the pension system was insolvent. We needed a growing population so that we could retire earlier. It's like, oh, did you think that? Oh, I guess these people are really dumb. They brought in a bunch of people to work, and they all just went on welfare, and they just kept bringing them in by the millions. These people are so dumb. It's shocking that this happened. Yeah, only if you actually think that the migrants were brought over to actually help the European people or the American people. When you understand that the whole point of the migrants coming is to destroy this whole system, to be drains on the society, it's not shocking at all. So it shouldn't be shocking that the Iran war is not going anywhere and that it's so deeply unpopular in America and yet being pursued with abandon by the Republicans. It's all in line with the actual goals, which is to destroy American sovereignty, destroy the ability of the American people to stand up for themselves by destroying the only vessel that even moderately gives consideration to the American people, which is, of course, the Republican Party. So that's where we're at. And all of it's being massively complicated and confused by the invasion of MAGA, the takeover of MAGA by the, until 2024, liberal Democrat Zionist who decided that the Republican Party was the more viable vessel for this war with Iran, which is exactly why they started supporting Donald Trump, which is why none of this actually contributes to the American people. This was always the point. I want to go to clip 43 here. I haven't actually watched this, but I think it's interesting. I think it ties a lot of things together. Okay. So this is Mike Pompeo, right, who was the Secretary of State under Trump, is a total diehard Zionist agent. And you can get into his stuff. It's crazy. And they wanted to set him up to be, was it Pompeo that Epstein suggested take over instead of Mike Pence? There's an email where Jeffrey Epstein says, maybe we should get Pompeo as vice president so when it happens, he can take over. Talking about the assassination of Donald Trump and wanting to get a puppet in a position to take over. I think that was Pompeo he was talking about. But Pompeo is totally a Zionist agent. It's like beyond obvious. And he's talking to the Tikva Fund, which is a government-sponsored Jewish organization. And I'll show you the leader of Tikva Fund in just a second to tie this all in together. This is Mike Pompeo, former Secretary of State, talking to the Tikva Fund about Tucker Carlson, who they obviously hate to a maximum degree. And it's sort of perfect that this is the case because they could not have picked somebody that is less anti-Semitic, that is less anti-Israel. I mean, Tucker loves Israel and probably still does love Israel to a pretty large degree. I mean, he used to just rave about it and talk about his favorite vacation spot ever. And like, he loves it. He's never said anything anti-Semitic, even in the slightest. All he's done is criticize Israel and some of the more extremist Jewish factions, which every religion has and which everybody criticizes as long as they're not Jewish. But religious extremism is bad no matter what flavor it comes in. So they hate Tucker. So it's like, it's a good illustration of like, what are they really fighting? Are they really fighting Islamists that are, you know, trying to kill Jews? Are they really fighting Nazis that are walking around with swastika tattoos, wanting to gas the Jews? Or are they fighting the Tucker Carlsons? Are they fighting people who don't hate anybody, who don't have ulterior motives, who are simply telling the truth about what our country is involved in overseas? They could not have picked a better model, an illustration of who they hate and why they hate them. Tucker Carlson is the perfect example of how off the mark they are and what their, you know, outrage is really fueled by. It's not because they're all about to die. It's not because Hitler is walking around. It's because people like Tucker Carlson are popular, well-spoken Christian and just not willing to go along with the death and destruction that Israel demands. Let's go to Mike Pompeo talking to the Tikva Fund about the danger, the threat of Tucker Carlson.
In some sense, the Tucker Carlson nuttiness, the anti-Semitism that sits with Candace Owens and these people who just, I don't understand. I can't understand them and we should reject them wholeheartedly. It's been there. It may have been more latent, and I think this rips the mask off, but to some extent. Second, if you know, there's this thing that people call the MAGA movement. Sign me up. I'm part of that too. And yet I think what the president did was fantastic. When I think of MAGA, I think about people who, believe Washington causes more problems than it solves. I think of lower tax. I think of the traditional Reagan model. That's most of what, MAGA folks would stand up for. We didn't like open borders, right? And then there's this other piece. There's this piece that is truly isolationist. That's not the Donald Trump that I worked for 4 years. I never saw that. I saw someone who talked about peace through strength, who didn't want to go to war and didn't want to put big forces deployed for extended period of time. Those are all true things. Who wanted out of Afghanistan after 20 years because he thought that the costs exceeded the benefits. But you know, it's interesting. He didn't pull out of Afghanistan. This is what people forget, right? Like, no, he understood that you couldn't do what President Biden did.
I want to see, Tucker Carlson dethroned. The weirdness of the second Trump administration is the way Donald Trump has surrounded himself with these people inside the administration and then right, you know, with Tucker Carlson adjacent to the administration. J.D. Vance's son, Tucker Carlson's son is working for J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance and Don Jr. are celebrating their friendship with Tucker Carlson. And I would like to see him become an embarrassment to J.D. Vance. I would like to see Donald Trump attack him, not just call him kooky from now and then, but really now and then, but really make him off limits to everybody in the administration. I think once he's unplugged from power, he will look a lot less influential and a lot less attractive to people. I don't know that will actually happen, but I can hope.
May I just add one thought there? Because Mike, I think those are all really good points. I think it's important. I think the administration has been too muddled there.
Been too muddled. They're so frustrated that Tucker Carlson got popular without them. That's the key thing here. It's so, again, the projection where it's just like Trump is surrounded by what, anti-Semites? You think that Donald Trump has surrounded himself in his current administration with Tucker Carlson types? The hell are you talking about? Again, it's literal, just pure, unadulterated projection from them. They say if we can, you know, separate Carlson from power. Tucker Carlson's power comes from his popularity with the people. His power comes from that he tells the truth and is authentic. You can't take that away from him. They like think that they should be able to do that. They think that like because they don't like Tucker Carlson, therefore everybody has to destroy Tucker Carlson. Because Tucker Carlson doesn't play their game, Donald Trump has to. He has to not just, you know, insult Tucker Carlson. He has to wage war against Tucker Carlson. He has to. Like, why? F you. Like, what are you talking about? Tucker Carlson is popular on his own volition. You can't control it or take it away from him. Like, what do you want to happen? Like, it's crazy. It's like somebody demanding gravity not exist or the sky not be blue. It's like you can't just make demands like this. You are not masters of the universe. Despite what you may think, people's popularity is actually outside of your control, and you don't have a right or the ability to dictate what's popular and what's not in America. The arrogance, honestly, all about Tucker Carlson, happy-go-lucky father of a million Tucker Carlson, fly fishing in Maine, is just like, just like a red hot iron in the back of these people's minds. Just like, God, he must be killed. He must be destroyed. It's sick. It's pathological. It really is. So tying this all together, that was a podcast by the TIKFA Fund, funded by the American government with a former Secretary of State talking about how the life of Tucker Carlson should be ruined. He should be stripped of power. He should be, they don't say it, but him being killed would be nice. I mean, what do they say? Like a fox in the hen house, he should be eradicated. You know, in not so many words, the United States government is paying the TIKFA Fund to slander and demonize and mildly threaten Tucker Carlson. The TIKFA Fund, its leader is featured in the Eighth Front. I'll show you the full clip here. It's the craziest one in the entire damn video. Eric Cohen is his name. I just want you to hear this, listen to this. Head of the TIKFA Fund, one of the major, this is clip 40, one of the major Jewish, you know, NGOs funded by our government. Keep this in mind when you think about Jonathan Greenblatt saying it's horribly anti-Semitic to blame Jews for what Israel's doing. Just think about everything I've been showing you today in the last couple of weeks. Here's Eric Cohen, head of the TIKFA Fund. with a message to American Jews. Okay, let's watch.
When I was growing up, the average American Jew never understood that being Jewish was the most important thing in one's life. The illusion of Jewish normalcy is simply impossible to believe in anymore, even in America. An era has ended. Since October 7th, the breaking down of our Jewish illusions has often occurred in the darkest ways. The deliberate rape and slaughter of our Israeli kin at the Nova Music Festival. The organized assault on our children and our people at university campuses across the nation. The rise of Hamas sympathizers on the mainstream left and Nazi sympathizers on the far right. The victory of a Jew-hating and Israel-hating mayor in New York City. The murder of Israeli embassy staffers in Washington, D.C. The assassination of Jews celebrating Hanukkah at Bondi Beach. We dance, they kill. We believe in civility, democracy, and the rule of law, and they traffic in conspiracy theories, anti-Semitism, and an improbable Tucker Carlson AOC alliance against American civilization, held together by the pathetic idea that the world's problems would vanish if only the Jews would stop causing them. American Jews are the wealthiest Jewish community in the history of the world. We can afford Jewish schooling once we believe again that it matters. Our Israeli brothers and sisters are fighting in the tunnels, on the streets, and in the air. As American Jews, we can help wage the battle of ideas, beginning with the clear idea that the preservation of Jewish sovereignty, including the defense of Jerusalem as the moral capital of the West, is the defining moral imperative of our age. The past 2 years have transformed the American Jewish condition in profound ways. We are rightly anxious about the current rise of anti-Semitism. Our faith in the American project itself has been shaken. The mainstream left and now the radical right seem arrayed against us. Yet we must understand the true nature of the crisis. The attack on the Jews is a revolt against the Hebraic civilization that began when God called Abraham to enter into a new covenant. The enemies of the Jews seek to destroy the West itself. The only serious answer to this challenge is to believe again that being Jewish is the most important thing in the world and in our own lives, and that defending Jewish civilization is the only way to advance the larger cause of human liberty and human dignity. For decades, American society allowed Jews to live normal lives. This was a pleasant holiday from our destiny. The holiday is over. We can lament our fate, or we can heed our summons. We can shed our Jewish stars or wear them with a sense of purpose. But we must embrace the truth that the Jewish people are not normal. We never really were. And only by rejecting the illusion of Jewish normalcy can we resist Jewish delusions and Jewish despair. Ultimately, it is the study of history that is the only antidote to hysteria. And despite the dark days and tragic chapters, Jewish history is mankind's greatest source of metaphysical hope, that life is meaningful, that good ultimately prevails, that creation has a purpose, and that God's guiding hand is real, even if the scenes in this divine drama sometimes make no sense to the mourning human heart. May the great Jewish awakening continue in strength.
Is that what this is? This is the Great Jewish Awakening? I don't like it. I don't like it at all. So, just to translate here, he just told American Jews that their time in America is over and that it's time to abandon America for their co-ethnics in Israel. Just let's just clarify what he just told everybody, just not in so many words. By the way, can the crew, can you just scrub through it and put it on screen? You'll notice this guy is talking. He rocks back and forth the entire time. It's insane. Like, can you speed it up? Speed it up and watch. He's like possessed or something. He does this rocking and he never stops the entire time. It's like so distracting. I was going to include that in the Eighth Front just to be like, what's wrong with this dude? Why is he just rocking back and forth continuously? He's got some nervous energy going on. Tikva. So again, funded by the American government. That was the head of Tikva Fund saying that this whole experience in America where Jews were treated well, were treated equally, weren't discriminated against, were able to be fully fledged members of the society without any special privileges, but without any special restrictions either. He calls that a pleasant fantasy, a vacation from reality, a vacation from their destiny. In other words, like, don't believe this whole, like, you're accepted as Americans, you're just as American as everybody else. That's a lie he's telling you. We're not the ones telling you that. Americans aren't the ones telling you that. It's the Israeli control structure, the power structure, the Israeli hive mind, which, by the way, if it's not a conspiracy, then explain to me how they all say exactly the same talking points every time, over and over, all of them, at exactly the same time, in exactly the same way. They all know to go after Tucker. They all know to go after Kansas. They all are now suddenly saying that Western society is Jewish society. It's all based on Judaism. It's a Hebraic civilization. Therefore, the moral center of the Western world is in Jerusalem. Therefore, if you're against Jews, you're against the West. Therefore, they're setting up the paradigm of it's the leftists and the Islamists versus the Jews and the Christians, which is a false dichotomy. Because obviously the Christians are coming under massive assault from the Jews as we speak in the Middle East right now, as well as here in America with the freedom of speech restrictions, specifically against Christian beliefs, as we saw with Karee Jean-Poehler. So, and he conflates, he says, you know, Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens, they hate American civilization, are trying to tear it down, but that the Jews are not a part of American civilization, but they are the creators and the founders of Western thought and philosophy, but they have to reject it outright and embrace their Judaism and embrace the destiny that Jews are not supposed to be normal American citizens. They're supposed to, I guess, move on from America at a certain point once they've gotten what they wanted. I don't know. I don't know what the implication is there, but I'm not the one saying any of this. So again, this is what I mean, like, holistically, when you look at all of this and you've got, like, Zionism, anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism, conflating that absolutely. And then the person who does that, deliberately makes that a key part of his whole program, then goes on TV and says, I can't believe people are blaming the Jews for what Israel's doing. We're not in charge of Israel, but you are the one who wanted to conflate it. You are the one who is advocating for endless support of Israel and silencing anybody who wants to criticize it, allowing them to behave abominably, causing people to hate them. Hatred that you transmogrify again back into anti-Semitism to then tell the Jewish people in America, everybody in America hates you. You have to come with us and flee. Do you get it? It's just all pure, unadulterated, ridiculous manipulation, inversion, subversion, projection. None of it makes any sense on the face of it. None of it is consistent. It is all schizophrenic and dangerous. And by the way, it all has to do with Israel, a satanic little banking cabal project started by the Rothschilds. In the first 5 minutes of the next hour, I'll go to a video by Zach Faust. In the first 5 minutes of the next segment, James Fishback for the remainder. Stay with us.
Has InfoWars not delivered? In Gladiator, he chops up the first four guys when they throw him in the ring, or, you know, in the arena, and he says, are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants. But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for Team Humanity, against the globalist, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried Ultramethylene Blue or our Bovine Colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you should become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it reoccurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click of your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything
on thealexhorton.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats, 10% off on things like the collectible knives, and up to 40% off on supplements like ultramethylene blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March mega sale right now, running until the 17th at thealexjonesstore.com, and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.
Rothschilds come to America. Officially, they really started making noise about 1837. That was our first big crash. And what about after that? When they got here, what did they start doing?
Businesses, infrastructure, railroads were big for them, and they would eventually start doing business with the mortgage, J.P. Morgan.
Okay, so like, at what point did they like grab our country by the balls?
Well, that would be about 1895, 1896-ish. That's when J.P. Morgan and the Rothschilds bailed out the entire country of America because we're running out of gold. And so they said, hey, we have $45 million worth of gold. Want it? I imagine there was a little bit of, you know, quid pro quo there. Daggone. But, and then there's 1910, the Jekyll Island meeting after the 1907 bank panic that led to the 1913 formation of the Federal Reserve. And that was all because of an island that they met at that was owned by J.P. Morgan, and the boat that sank that was owned by J.P. Morgan that kept the Federal Reserve's naysayers from getting the meetings. And now we have a central bank that's controlled by Rothschild Rockefeller money. Jeez. And then when you, that's not to mention the Revolutionary War, the War of 1812, they pressured America heavy to finance it. Even the Civil War, they were on both sides in the Napoleonic War. And guess what? The first thing our central bank funded after it was founded in
1913. That would be, did they fund, oh God.
6 months later, World War One.
Well, that's all bad, but at least it stopped.
Shortly after that, Britain would write them a letter saying, hey, that land in the Middle East that you want, we're going to give it to you, Mr. Rothschild. Israel, it's all yours.
Oh.
The reason you can't afford an engagement ring or a wedding band, it's because of the Rothschilds and the De Beers Diamond Company. In the mid-80s, they created an M&A company. An M&A company is a merger and acquisition company. Think private equity, but before private equity. And guess what they did with...
We might need to slow down, but what did they do?
They were using it to get involved in Wall Street. They wanted to infiltrate the New York Wall Street monster that had been forming in America. You want to know what they did to do that?
What did they do?
Did it by sending somebody to New York City to oversee the purchase of McMillan Inc. McMillan Inc. was a media company that would be McGraw-Hill, which is responsible for a lot of the elementary school books that you and I were raised on. Do you want to know who they sent to New York City in 1988 to do this? Robert Maxwell. He was in partnership with Robert Maxwell. And when Robert Maxwell would go on to die on his yacht because he owed the Mossad money, guess who he also owed about 50 million pounds to? The Rothschild family through the Bank of England.
Wait, Robert Maxwell's, that's Ghislaine Maxwell's father? Is connected to the Rothschild?
That's right. Robert Maxwell, along with Roy Cohn, had been running a corporate blackmail ring throughout the entire world run by the Mossad. And when he died, Ghislaine and Jeffrey Epstein took on the reins. That's why they had been introduced only 6 months prior to his death. After that, they would go on to infiltrate people like the princes, the politicians, and the media moguls that we know today. And we know through Alan Dershowitz, Epstein's lawyer through 2008 and 2009, admitted that he was introduced to Jeffrey Epstein in the early 90s by a Rothschild.
Okay, well, we don't have proof that Epstein worked for a Rothschild.
Here's an email from Epstein over to Peter Thiel. Says, as you know, I represent the Rothschild family.
Maybe only, like, represented a few of them. Maybe he didn't represent the whole family.
Here's this wrinkly old pervert, Les Wexner, saying he represented the whole family.
What? Okay, what am I supposed to do with this?
Tag Howard Lutnick. I think that's what we could do, because I believe he's a Mossad plant that's currently being seeded by the Rothschild family in a place, precariously, right next to Jeffrey Epstein.
All because he's his neighbor? Like, he just maybe bought the home on Zillow.
He didn't. He bought the home in 1998 from the Comet Trust, which was run by the son of the World Jewish Congress founder and World Zionist Foundation organizer. Also before that, it was owned by Jeffrey Epstein himself. Well, just because he owned it doesn't mean like it was his house or anything like that, or ever lived there. Or, like that. Come on, Jeffrey Epstein would actually live there in 1992, starting right after things got serious with Ghislaine. So they would probably be shagging or doing whatever from 92 to 95 in that property before moving over into the other property, which will remain vacant for about 3 years before Jeffrey Epstein gets to pick his neighbor, happens to be the Secretary of Commerce, Howard Lutnick, who would profit off of 9/11, survive 9/11, and also then use Cantor Fitzgerald with his sons at the helm to profit off of the very tariff being shot down in the Supreme Court that he helped form. So you basically think Howard Lutnick is like a really high-level crisis actor.
Yeah, I thought of it that way. Yes, that's exactly what I think.
What a liar. Lutnick the liar, that's what I call him.
One of the most important things to me in my life is to get things right and to tell the truth and to be accurate. That's why they say Alex Jones is right. But it's not just our news, our prediction, our information that are incredibly accurate. It's the products. And out of all the amazing supplements at thealexjonesstore.com, our methylene blue, ultra methylene blue, is the best you're going to find on the market. It's so good for your body. Instant clean, amazing energy. You owe it to yourself, if you sat on the fence, to go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get ultra methylene blue. And believe me, you are going to want to reorder it again. We have an 84% reorder on that product. No other supplement anywhere has anything even close. That is how amazing it is. Secure your ultra methylene blue now at thealexjonesstore.com, and thanks for keeping us on the air.
Repeat what you said is happening. You feel in the...
I feel like that stuff in my fingers. I feel tingling fingers.
There's the camera. Blast them with full power right there.
Ah! Yeah!
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. This is The War Room with Harrison Smith.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The War Room. Final hour, and I can't tell you how excited I am to welcome once again my guest, James Fishback. You can follow him on X at @J_Fishback. His campaign site is Fishback2026.com. He's a fourth generation Floridian and Republican candidate running to secede Ron DeSantis is Florida's next governor in 2026. If you're in Florida, you gotta vote for James Fishback. Fishback2026.com is the website. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Great to be here, Harrison. How are you?
I'm great. I feel like, last time we talked, it wasn't that long ago. You were on the show and you know, we were talking about your sort of insurgent campaign, the rising popularity. It was already like getting a lot of, motivation going on. Since then, you have exploded. It's like, I don't even know what we were talking about back then. This is, the heart of the, you know, the eye of the hurricane. You are just on a roll, sir. How does it feel?
It's really humbling. We're doing 7-8 events every single week. On Thursday night, we were at the University of Florida where we had 600 patriots there, students, locals, people drove from Jacksonville and Orlando up. It's our largest event yet. And so the momentum is real. People are hungry for an America First movement. And we've seen that in some parts, but this is really, I think, the first campaign that has unapologetically embraced the tenets of America First. These are not new tenets, Harrison. You guys talk about this all the time. This is nothing new. In fact, this is not conservatism in many respects. It is restorationism, to restore the nation back to the founding principles of 1776. The idea that our money, our tax money, ought to be spent here, not to be fund pointless foreign wars. The idea that we put our citizens first before a so-called global labor market. The idea that mass migration, whether it's illegal or legal, is wrong and needs to be stopped. And that's what I'm fighting for here in Florida. 23 million people call our state home. I'm a fourth generation Floridian. And when I meet people, whether they're black or they're white, rich or poor, even Republican or Democrat, I can't tell you how many Democrats, Harrison, have pulled me aside and whispered that they're changing their party affiliation to Republican to vote for us in the primary. Wow. Because they realize that this is bigger than Republican or Democrat. It's bigger than left versus right. This is about right versus wrong, good versus evil. And it is evil what, yes, some in the Democrat establishment are doing, but what many in the Republican establishment continue to allow to happen. And that's what our campaign is about, is standing up to the uniparty. As I told folks at UF last night, 600 of them, I said, look, the left wing and the right wing are both attached to the same corrupt uniparty bird. And what I'm asking voters to do is to give me a 12-gauge shotgun to shoot that freaking bird out of the sky and take our country back.
It's obviously resonating, and we brought up while you were speaking the video of just the, yeah, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kids waiting for you to speak at University of Florida. They're young, they're fit looking, they're involved. I mean, this your campaign really has an energy, and it's obvious to see why. In a world where it seems like our vote is always taken for granted in the best case scenario, it's just sort of, you know, taken for granted and then ignored. In the worst case scenario, it's used to go to war with Iran or some other ridiculous catastrophe. If people are looking for that other option, they're looking for somebody unique and a voice like yours. Is it mostly the young people? Because Vanity Fair just came out with an article calling you. They say you captured the Gen Z right. Is it Gen Z that's mostly driving you, or are you getting some boomers in there as well? Are you getting the old people as well?
We're getting everybody. There's nothing about our movement that is exclusive to young voters. I meet older voters as well. A guy named Camilo out in Orlando 2 weeks ago pulled me aside and said, if you don't take a penny from AIPAC, you got my vote and my entire family's vote. You know, he was in his 50s. And so there's nothing about this movement that is just about young or old or black or white or whatever. It is a movement that stands for the dignity of every single American citizen that says we will not be replaced. We will not have our country auctioned off. We will not allow Blackstone, BlackRock, and Wall Street to bid up single family homes. We will not allow the largest companies in the country to fire us, to fire our kids, to fire our neighbors, and replace them with slaves from India, all to make a quick buck and to pad their profit margins so their third quarter EPS can beat the Bloomberg consensus estimates. This is about getting back to something bigger than any one party. It is about becoming a truly American country once again. And that's why I'm encouraging anyone, whether they're Republican or Democrat or independent, make sure you're registered as a Republican. Go to votemyflorida.org right now. Check your voter registration. Because Harrison, do the math. The next governor of Florida is going to be a Republican. We know that. It's a deep red state, right? 1.4 million more registered Republicans than Democrats. Trump won the state by 13 points. Ron DeSantis won it by 20. And so if the next governor is going to be a Republican, and that's a guarantee, the only thing that's up for debate is what kind of Republican is it going to be? Is it going to be AIPAC Shakur, Byron Donalds, H1 Byron? If you want someone who's going to do the bidding of AI data centers, Wall Street, AIPAC, Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, who will stop anti-Semitism at all cost, which means bridging the First Amendment rights of American citizens to criticize Benjamin Netanyahu and his war crimes, Byron Donalds is your guy if that's the case. If you want someone who's unapologetically pro-America, you want someone who's going to stand for your First Amendment, your Second Amendment, your Fourth Amendment, we don't talk about that enough, but InfoWars, you all are patriots for standing up to Palantir. We got a real problem here. Palantir is moving their headquarters to Miami, and I've said very simply, the digital weapons of war that are trained on terrorists and foreign nations can never be aimed at American citizens on U.S. soil. Harrison, day one, I am signing an executive order to ban any executive agency at the state level from doing business with Palantir. The Fourth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution bans a surveillance state, whether it's run by the CIA, the NSA, or Peter Thiel and his tech bro buddies. And we know what happens at the Peter Thiel parties. I don't want to get into that right now, but your viewers know what happens. And so we say no to that mass surveillance state here in Florida. That's all. I got Democrats who don't want to be spied on. There are Americans who don't want to be done. Jewish Americans who don't want their photo and their social credit scores in one party.
You're breaking up a little bit. Sorry to interrupt, James. You're breaking up a little bit. Maybe the connection will get a little bit better for our radio listeners. James Fishback, he's a busy man. He's on the road from one event to the other. So we're happy he could squeeze us in and make himself available for us. But it looks like maybe he's hitting an empty spot in the cell phone signal on the road there. So we'll reconnect with him in just a second. But obviously I cannot agree with what he's saying more. And I love that the focus on the Bill of Rights and the amendments and the rights that we enjoy as Americans, this has to be the way this is argued. I'm not about to get into the mud talking about, like, is it anti-Semitic? Is it not anti-Semitic? You know, me and Mark Levin are not about to go head-to-head on what is approved language. The fact is, it's all approved. We have the First Amendment. It explicitly gives you the right to criticize religions, and that should be full stop. The Fourth Amendment protects against search and seizure, even from private companies when they're doing it hand-in-hand with the government. So I just love that you're focusing on those fundamental foundational rights of America that, yeah, we should all be able to embrace and fear it being taken away in the way that it is by using these private corporations. And let me ask you about that, because just yesterday there was a interview with Larry Fink where he says that the wokeness has gone too far. And he is actually trying to, like, claim that BlackRock is going to lead us back to the center. BlackRock started ESG. They were the beginning. And I know that, you know, you ran a fund that deliberately made investments not based on ESG, but based on merit. What is your comment about Larry Fink not taking credit for the ESG DEI phenomenon that we're still trying to dig ourselves out of?
Well, this is the same Larry Fink that sent letters to publicly traded company CEOs and said, if you don't adopt racial equity quotas, that we are going to remove you from our funds. I mean, he's the one who started this five-alarm fire. He's the one who lit the match, threw the Molotov cocktail, and now he wants to sell you the fire insurance and put out the blaze. Absolutely not. Larry Fink is an un-American globalist. Our founding fathers would have known what to do with Larry Fink. And now all of a sudden he wants to play this circus game that he's going to de-wokeify when he is the one that actually infected the system in 2019 and 2020. He was the one, by the way, that Fed Chairman Jerome Powell was giving advice to. They were getting on calls frequently. Spring 2020, talking about that way to blow out the global economy and dollars.
Absolutely. Again, sorry, you're breaking up again, but we're showing the video here where Larry Fink says you have to force behavior, and that's what we're doing. We're forcing behavior. Again, my guest is James Fishback. Follow him on X at @J_Fishback. We're dealing with technical difficulties. He is on the road. Again, we're just happy that he could connect with us at all, but my apologies. You know, I wish we didn't have to jump in and out like this, but Fishback 2026 is the website. And if the crew can bring up my computer screen, I want to show you what has happened in just the last few days with James Fishback. These are the odds on Polymarket. And you can see the straight up. I mean, it looks like an immigration graph in Canada, folks. It is a straight up and down line following a profile on the New York Times in which they called him the future of the GOP, probably meaning that in an insulting or degrading way. They probably didn't mean for that to translate into a massive rise in popularity, but that's incredible. So, I mean, it seems like you're really striking fear into the establishment. They obviously are totally in on Byron Daniels, whatever his name is. How are you going to go toe-to-toe with him? I understand you're doing a debate in July. I mean, what's the dynamic between your campaign and his campaign at this moment?
Well, he's a pathological liar. He is someone who has eons of political experience. And I never want to catfish. I never want to set false expectations, Harrison. I have zero political experience. I don't have the experience of going to Congress and borrowing $5 billion from China and giving it to Israel like Byron Donalds did. I don't have the experience of siding with President Biden to eliminate the vetting requirements for Afghan refugees, one of whom shot two National Guardsmen last year before Thanksgiving. I don't have the experience of working with the Uniparty to rake the taxpayer over the coals and to increase the national debt by $7 trillion, which is what Byron Donalds did in his 5 years of Congress, or to make $4.8 million trading stocks. And so my mission in that debate on July 21st is very simple. Draw a very clear comparison, not just between Byron Donalds, the man, but Byron Donalds, the vision. I'm old Florida all the way. I'm a fourth generation Floridian. My dad ran a tree trimming business, later drove the city bus for a decade. My granddad was a World War II vet. He taught at Florida Atlantic University. He herded 500 head of cattle on the side. My great-granddad was a World War I vet. He ran a small hotel on Fort Lauderdale Beach. And so my roots run deep in this state. And I've seen the very identity of Florida change over the years. Rapacious, greedy property developers coming in, taking every inch of land to build a mini mall, an AI data center, or whatever the heck a Five Below is. And then you also have this invasion of Northerners, these carpetbaggers coming and pushing folks out of their own community, communities that they built. And so my vision for Florida is pretty simple. If Florida is the best state in the country, It has to remain the best for the people who made it the best. Working class people, young couples, and our seniors. They need a governor who's going to fight for them.
Absolutely. And again, it seems like they've thrown everything at you that typically could derail a challenging, you know, insurgent campaign. And yet you keep powering on. You seem invulnerable to their smears and claims. I mean, I'm looking at a New York Times, the New York Times article about you, and it says running on rage bait. You're a rage baiter, sir. But yeah, it seems like they're throwing everything at you and you just keep trudging along. What's the secret to it? Like how do you avoid succumbing to these attacks that they're launching at you over and over?
It's a combination of three things: laughter, caffeine, and Christ. And faith in prayer, in taking time off, reflecting, and making sure that
we lost you again, James, if you can hear me. Again, folks, he's on the road. He's traveling from one site to another. So, you know, we just got to deal with the little interruptions. Crew, let me know when he gets back in. And I got, because I got some other stories to ask him about, including his tumultuous relationship with Waffle House. But he's got some incredible policy suggestions as well that, again, the thing is, if the Republicans were smart, like if the Republican Party brought me in and they said, we're really worried about midterms, we don't know what's going to happen with the future of this party, you know, what can we do to get back on track? I would say, let James Fishback win. Let him win. And even if I'm just being purely cynical, and it's like, how do we trick the people? Because right now, I think the trust and the faith in the voting system, not even the voting system, in the ability for our votes to even possibly make a change, it's completely eroded. It's basically gone. Trump has sort of forced that lesson down our throat, right? If James Fishback wins, I have hope again. That to me is what the James Fishback campaign represents, is like, can we do it? Is it possible? Could we, if we got the right candidates in the right positions, actually save this country with some hardcore, thoughtful, intelligent, but hardline policies? And if he gets screwed over by the establishment, if they find it that important to keep Florida for the next 4 years, that they're going to destroy this rising, extremely popular young man, like, it just shows that they are not concerned with the American people. Once they're not even concerned with winning elections. So screw them. That's my pitch to the Republican Party. I'm not sure if you heard me, James, but I was saying, you know, the hope of the voting system is just gone at this point. So many people, unfortunately with Trump, it was like we got him everything he wanted and nothing changed for the positive. You represent maybe the last gasp. If you can get in office, if you can put some of your policies forward, maybe we can believe in voting again. Hey, we can solve this through the system. I think the Republican Party would be amiss to screw you over and not let you win the election. I think they should be helping you just to remind people, hey, voting can work. What do you think about that?
I think that's right, Harrison. And, you know, honestly, we're not going to vote our way out of this if the only two options on the ballot are both corrupt unit party wings of the same exact establishment institution. And so this is an example right now that I'm getting in Florida is, what are your views on redistricting? Yeah, well, if redistricting would allow us to pick up seats, that's nice. But the question is, what kind of Republicans are going to take those seats? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be Republicans like Randy Fine and Maria Salazar, who sell our country out to foreign interests, who encourage the H-1B lobby, who say nothing about the billions of dollars are being spent to fund a war in Iran that we have nothing to do with? Because if it is, then we have no business redistricting and no business even voting in these midterms. This midterm is going to be a proxy for what direction the country goes in for 2028. And needless to say, my campaign represents a vision, not one that I built, but one that has been in the making 250 years. It's a vision that was reignited by Pat Buchanan in the 80s and 90s. It is a vision that a lot of Americans tune into and want to see actually executed at some level of government. And so we have a lot to do here in Florida. And for folks who don't live in Florida, who don't necessarily have a vested interest in what happens here in our state, I would remind them that we are the third largest state. And so if we can prove a successful model of what America First unapologetically looks like, you're going to have a lot of other dominoes fall nationally. You're going to have a lot of reckoning in the Republican Party nationally. Other states go in this direction if we can prove this is a viable candidacy. And Harrison, look at the numbers. The polling, when I started, 2%. I'm at 23% now. I'm in second place against Congressman Donalds. Soon we will be at his bumper. Soon after, we will pull him over. We'll say, Congressman Donalds, get out of the car. License and registration. Hands behind your back. You, Congressman Donalds, you are under arrest for betraying America to AIPAC. And that is what we need. That is the kind of focus that we need, is to kick out the traitors. What would Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and Alexander Hamilton say right now if people like Byron Donalds and Randy Fine were taking money from Israel and then voting to give more money to Israel? This is a blanket conflict of interest, and it is nothing short of treason against the United States of America.
I agree, and I'm glad at least somebody out there in the political world is treating it with the seriousness it deserves, because so often it's just like, yeah, he's an Israel supporter. It's like, okay, but if he's actually working for a foreign country, do we understand what that means? It is treason. I'm glad you put it that way. Now, I don't want to – what you're talking about is very serious. What we're about to talk about may be a little bit goofy, but I got to get the story. What happened with Waffle House, man? What diner are you attending now? I only caught little snippets of it here or there. Can you tell our audience – what happened with the saga of you and IHOP and Waffle House and Denny's, I guess, now? What's going on here?
So we have 193 different Waffle House locations in Florida. It is everywhere from our urban counties in South Florida all the way through to our rural counties in the Northwestern Panhandle. And so on Tucker Carlson's show, I announced that I would do the statewide Waffle House tour, where I would visit every single Waffle House between now and Election Day to meet voters where they are. Truck drivers from Clewiston, U.S. sugar workers in Belglade who go there for a hot meal, warm coffee, or just a place to get away from the elements. And so it was a really exciting tour. We had visited six locations. We drew crowds of hundreds at each of the locations, most recently in Jacksonville, where we had 215 people there. And Waffle House was working with us. They actually reached out after the Tucker Carlson announcement and said, we want to help coordinate and facilitate this. And then abruptly, they sent me a cease and desist letter saying that I had been criminally trespassed, that if I or any of our campaign staff had showed up to Waffle House, we would be arrested for doing so. And it seems like Waffle House got the call, yep. But that's okay. We went to IHOP, and then they banned us, and they got the call. And so now we're at Denny's, and Denny's never gave us explicit permission, but they haven't disavowed or denounced. And for that, Harrison, they are patriots. So we're looking forward to our next Denny's stop, but also visiting small mom and pop diners all over the state. We are taking no days off. We are showing up. We are pulling massive crowds. We are connecting with people face to face, because Floridians deserve a governor that they can see, talk to, and even ask tough questions of over a hot meal. And that's what our campaign is going to continue to do between now and Election Day on August 18th.
It's almost just the perfect like image of what's going on in the world right now. It's like you're this popular, like up and coming politicians. The actual company is like, yeah, heck yeah, let's do it. Until suddenly they get the call of, no, you're not allowed to do this. You have to reject him. And then they do. It's just like, can we not have a good time? Can we not just enjoy ourselves and run a campaign? Constant interference from people pulling strings to get you shut down. It's utterly infuriating. And I understand you did not take, you rejected a $500,000 donation from somebody that wanted you to disavow Nick Fuentes. Can you tell us that story in about 30 seconds here?
Yeah. So I had a donor reach out, very positive about the campaign, liked our messaging, thought we had a real chance of winning. But he wanted to make clear that his support, his $500,000 donation to our PAC, was contingent on me putting out a tweet disavowing Nick Fuentes and his supporters. And I politely said no. I ended the call, and I said, no amount of money could ever get me to disavow patriotic Americans. I've met the folks who watch Nick's show at my events in Pasco County, Hillsborough County. They show up with their America First hat, their Wang Half t-shirts. And I got to tell you, these guys, they're smart. They're well-informed. They are patriotic. And so there's no amount of money that could ever get me to disavow American patriots in my state.
Well, I just think it's telling that they think it's worth that much to get you to disavow. $500,000 just for a single tweet? It must really be worth
something.
That's
a lot of Waffle House, Harrison.
That's a lot of Waffle House. You could have your own Waffle House. Yeah, they can't kick you out if you own the franchise, right? Maybe that's the next step. All you have to do is disavow Nick Fuentes.
Maybe that's what they're trying to stop.
You could own a Waffle House. James Fishback. Follow him on X at @J_Fishback. The website is fishback2026.com. He's running for Florida governor. You got to register to be a Republican. You got to vote for him against Byron Daniels or Donalds. I literally can never remember the man's name because he's that unimpressive.
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15-20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke, in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. Now, I've been telling you this for decades. They have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research. The human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information that the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer, but they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document. The potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. We've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation. Total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect, but it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our ultra methylene blue and the new T3, and it's even better than the next two. The same formula, but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Final segment of the War Room. Still have a lot to cover. And I've got to tell you that we've got a new way for you to connect and stay connected with InfoWars. As you know, we are going through some changes here, and you can join our list by texting InfoWars to 342581. Get out your phone, go to the text function, send a message to 342581 with the word InfoWars as the text. So text InfoWars to 342581. When you do that, you get a free methylene blue tincture with any product purchase at thealexjonesstore.com. That deal ends Monday, the 16th of March. So do not wait. Text InfoWars to 342581. Get a free bottle of methylene blue tincture with the purchase of any other product. We also have just launched our new and improved iodine tincture, the T3 triple nascent iodine, on thealexjonesstore.com. It's an introductory price. It's selling out quick, but it's 50% off right now for VIP members, 25% off for everybody else. Also, tonight is the last night. At midnight, the sale ends to get the limited edition America 250 t-shirt. It's $14.99. That's over 60% off. That deal ends tonight. And the shirt is very cool, and it is limited edition. It is celebrating the 250th anniversary of the founding of this great country, the greatest nation the world has ever seen, America. The United States of America, America 250-year t-shirt, limited edition. That sale ends tonight, so go today. There's also the March Mega Sale on. You're getting 40% off some of our top-selling products. So go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. Browse around. Find yourself a good product. If you text InfoWars to 342581, then you get a free bottle of methylene blue tincture. Grab yourself a t-shirt. While you're at it, at over 50% off, 60% off the t-shirt. That sale ends tonight and is a limited edition, one-of-a-kind t-shirt. And again, folks, We're about to end. Like, if you want something with our logo on it, get it now. Put it in a safe somewhere. Bring it out in 50 years. If the world still exists, sell it on, VR AI version of eBay is going to be, whatever awaits us in the future. And then sell it and make a ton of money. That's not financial advice. I'm neither a doctor nor a finance guy. I just say obvious things, but don't sue me. With that, we got a lot of videos still to go to and a lot of stuff still to cover. I think what we'll do here is go over another video that we've played snippets of before. I feel like it's high time we do this. It's been a while since that Shlomo Kramer video came out. I'd never had a chance to fully explain how he gave us the blueprint of how to basically eliminate dissidents. That was the goal, right? They want to provide a single narrative from on high, and that's the narrative that's allowed. And anybody who diverts from that narrative is causing political instability and has to be silenced, which will be easy once they capture all of the platforms, all the social media, have digital ID to figure out if you're the real person who's tweeting. And then, of course, to stack rank your authenticity, aka social credit score. So I think it's worth it. I think it's worth it to like really go through some of these videos with a fine tooth comb and see if we can't understand what's actually being said. Okay. We're going to do the same thing here for very much the same type of video where once again, another head of cybersecurity, master of the world, Larry Ellison, in this case, head of Oracle, whose family owns every media outlet and is getting more of them because the Trump administration wants people to lie about how well the war is going, according to Pete Hegseth. So he talked to Tony Blair. Once again, if you're watching yesterday, the network, the web that should be illustrated in your mind is Marco Rubio, Larry Ellison, Ehud Barak, Peter Thiel, Jeffrey Epstein. They're all tied in together. And of course, Tony Blair and Marco Rubio were both put forward as sort of superlative, exemplary puppets for the Israeli policy set. So I want to go to Larry Ellison here, clip number 41. Here is Larry Ellison talking to Tony Blair at the World Economic Forum. And once again, just like Shlomo Kramer, if you listen to what Larry Ellison's saying, he's giving you the blueprint. This is the elite talking to the other elite, getting them all on the same page so they can all carry this out in an orchestrated fashion. We're just listening in so we can learn how to disrupt and stop their evil plans. Let's go to Larry Ellison, clip 41 here.
Because we're constantly recording, watching and recording everything that's going on. Citizens will be on their best behavior because we're constantly recording and reporting everything that's going on.
The first thing a country needs to do is to unify all of their data so it can be consumed and used by the AI model. You have to take all of your healthcare data, your diagnostic data, your electronic health records, your genomic data. The NHS in the UK has an incredible amount of population data, but it's fragmented. It's not easily accessible by these AI models. We have to take all of this data we have in our country and move it into a single, if you will, unified data platform so we provide context. When we want to ask a question, we've provided that AI model with all the data they need to understand our country. So that's the big step. That's kind of the missing link. We need to unify all of the national data, put it into a database where it's easily consumable by the AI model, and then ask whatever question you like.
All right. So once again, and you can combine both of these, right? The Shlomo Kramer and the Larry Ellison to get a full-fledged picture, right? You need to get everybody's data so you can feed it into an AI, and you need it from everywhere. And again, he just like says this as if it's casual. He said genomic data. I'm sorry, what? You want our DNA profile factored into all of this? Gee, I wonder if there are any ulterior motives to that or any, you know, bad things you could do with the universal genomic data of everybody in the world. I bet that'd be very useful for some of your operations. He says the NHS has tons of data. We just can't get our grubby mitts on it. NHS, of course, the national healthcare system of the UK. Very convenient. If you get socialized healthcare, it all goes into one system. Now all you have is one system that you have to feed into the AI. Right now it's complicated because you got all these healthcare systems in America, but luckily they've been working on this for years. And as we've pointed out over and over, Project Nightingale from Google, various projects from Amazon, they already are using, you know, basically like capitalistic manipulation, like capitalistic techniques to insinuate themselves into healthcare systems to provide service. So you can host all of your healthcare data on our servers. It's great. It's fine. It's just, you know, they don't tell you that it's all in preparation of feeding you into a giant AI panopticon so that you can test and refine interventions to manipulate the entire world population into basically willfully accepting subjugation under your permanent rule. It's just like, this is what's happening, folks. I don't know what else to tell you, except that we have to stop it. Except that if we don't stop it, they're going to do it. And once they do it, there's no undoing it. There's no unringing the bell. I guess we could hope for some sort of, you know, radio wave from the sun wiping out all electronics and resetting us to the Stone Age. That might help. But aside from that, once these controls get put into place, the purpose of the controls is to guarantee the continuing existence of the system. So that's the problem here, right? Is like once these go into, like once you lose the First Amendment, how are you going to speak out, right? Once they make it illegal to protest the, you know, government program, how are you going to get rid of it? Like this is the problem. And we've even seen people like Elon Musk. He was asked about people escaping the draft, and he said that his automatic driving cars won't drive over the border. And we've already seen this implemented. In the run-up to January 6th, Google Maps, and I think Apple Maps also, would not give you directions to Washington, D.C. They didn't want you going there. During the riots in L.A. Last year around ICE, the Waymo cars were getting burned, obviously, so it actually made sense for them, but they wouldn't go to downtown L.A. They were geofenced and told not to go in the areas where the chaos was. Now, what happens when they want to mandate all cars be electric? It's impossible because the grid can't handle it, especially with the data centers being added on top of it. Already our grid is struggling to keep up. There's no way in any possible future that every single car could be made electric. So not everybody's going to own a car. So instead, there's going to be, instead of a million people with a million cars, there will be a million people sharing 10,000 cars. With an Uber-like app, you'll get rides by permission on an individual basis, and your credit score is going to have to be, you know, above a certain level to achieve that. So if you don't behave, maybe you just can't go anywhere. Or if you want to protest something the government's doing, maybe you can't get a ride there, and the city buses aren't going there, and the city trains won't go there, and you don't own a car, and it's too far for you to walk. So what are you going to do? Nothing. That's what. You're going to not protest because they've made it impossible for you to do so. This is the ultimate control grid. And it all requires our silence and our us to be censored while they implement all of this. Because it always has to be predicated on some other convenience. And they don't want people coming out and going, actually, here's what's going on. Here's what the actual intent and purpose of this is. And remember, we saw the video last week of the woman who said a census taker came to do a like pre-census preparing and training for the run-up to the 2030 census. She said that previously she'd been a census worker and the questions had been like, do you live here? Are you a citizen? I'm not even sure if they're allowed to ask that anymore, but like, do you live here? How many people live with you? And that was basically it. It's a census. You're just trying to get the population numbers. Some idea generally of who lives where. That's what the census is about. She says that now the new census asks any number of questions. How many people live there? What type of computers you have? What type of credit card you have? Like, she said that they got into like 15 minutes of like extremely detailed questioning about everything in her house and everything she owned and every method of communication she uses. So they're now going to use the census data, feed that into the AI. So that'll be a good baseline. Then you can add what you're getting from the social media companies on top of that. Social media companies, once you have the app on their phone, they're scraping all of your data. A lot of people's, you know, private information now is not kept on individual hard drives, but uploaded to the cloud. By the way, they're going to phase out physical memory. That's going away. Right now, NVIDIA, basically the entire economy in this weird incestuous cycle is like NVIDIA making chips for AI companies. So they never go to market. They aren't consumer chips. These are, you know, contracts between the chip makers and the AI company. And they're basically just like shuffling money back and forth. It's complicated, but the upshot is that RAM and like individual computing systems are becoming like too expensive. The demand for the data centers is so high that they're scaling back consumer purchasing. And, you know, this always happens. There's always a evolution of entertainment media or data storage media, right? And typically we don't notice and we don't really care because a better option becomes available and people just naturally gravitate to the new technology. You think about, obviously, like, you know, records got replaced by cassette tapes, got replaced by CDs, got replaced by MP3 players. Like, there's a natural progression that occurs out of convenience, ease, and a preference for the newer and better technology. That's not what's happening here, though. What's going to happen here is that they're phasing out. So we've gone from like giant hard drives that had 32 megabytes. Now it's down to like a little tiny card, going to have a couple terabytes. And that's going to go away. They're going to stop producing hard drives. They're going to stop producing solid state drives or even memory cards. And it's all going to be centralized data centers that you'll be able to like access their memory, access their technology on a per use basis, but you won't actually be able to store any data yourself at your home. They're going in that direction. They're making it, they're moving towards that direction. And again, like, how are you going to stop it? Like, if we want to stop it, we have to stop it collectively, or we have to do something, because otherwise it's just going to be that they're going to phase them out and just announce one day, hey, by the way, this is our last line of hard drives that we're ever going to produce. From now on, all the storage is going to be on the cloud, and then hang on to your hard drives, I guess, because they won't make any more. This is the way things are going, deliberately, on purpose, not because it's convenient, not because people prefer it, but because it's easier to control and you can delete things off people's. I mean, I've had it happen to me on my Google Drive, on my private Google Drive. I was keeping videos and one day I got an alert saying Google Drive decided you shouldn't have this video and deleted it. And it was a video that wasn't violent. It wasn't like I had, you know, material that's illegal by any means. It was a video that was a montage of like classical images of Europeans with a poem talking about like white people positively. I can't remember what the poem was, but it was just something. It was like the Awakened Saxon, something like that, right? Something just about like white people are cool. We've done great things in the past. Just sort of like an inspirational hype video type thing. Google deleted it from my drive. Okay. Like that's the world that we're heading into. Do you understand like what that means? That like if you got a couple weeks now to be downloading everything on band.video, putting it on a giant 4 terabyte hard drive, putting that in a Faraday cage, putting that in a safe and burying the safe in your backyard for 100 years when, you know, the robot tyranny finally weakens and the resistance can rise again. Like I don't know what happens from here on out. All I know is be downloading and storing things on your own hard drives as rapidly as humanly possible because it's all going away and it will all be subject to review and eradication from whoever's in charge once they get total control, once they feed all of your information into AI to figure out how to best control you. By the way, he's having that conversation with Tony Blair, whose son runs the digital ID program in the UK. Tony Blair was supposed to be the head of the Board of Peace before it became the Board of Peace, still very high up there, and once again was introduced to Marco Rubio, courtesy of Ehud Barak and Jeffrey Epstein, coordinating on who would be good puppets of theirs. And of course, Peter Thiel, Epstein introducing Ehud Barak to Peter Thiel just weeks before they get a big contract from the Israeli state to do cybersecurity safety there. Now Palantir is serving along with several other AI companies as the brains behind the Iranian invasion, which to me is sort of a failure right out the gate. I think if the first war being waged using AI is the Iran war, I think we can go back. I think we need to stop using AI. If AI was in any way responsible for telling our leadership that fighting Iran was a good idea, it should be removed from the chain of command. That might be a good excuse. Hey, tell Trump right now that he can blame all of this on AI and get out scot-free. And then we can stop AI. It's going to kill two birds with one stone. We can extricate ourselves from Iran without getting too embarrassed and, you know, shameful. You blame it on AI and then you can go, this is too dangerous. AI got us into this total quagmire. Not me, Trump. It was AI. We're going to get AI out of the war fighting system. This could be good. We could work with this. We of course are not going to, because AI is central to their desire to enslave all of humanity. This is a keystone of this operation. This is a force multiplier beyond anything they've ever had before. Let's go to clip number 4 here. This is the Pentagon chief AI officer explaining how Palantir has been used in the latest attack on Iran. Let's watch.
This is Maven Smart System, Palantir's software as a service product that we are deploying across the entire department. As you can see, it's not just one data feed, it's multiple. And instead of having 8 or 9 systems for those decision makers to look at every single day in order for them to make decisions, you then fuse it into a single visualization tool. The single visualization tool allows you to select, deselect different types of data, look at different approaches to data, but more importantly, action from the same system that you're trying to develop your workflows around. Once you have a detection that you want to actually move and actually move into a targeting workflow, for example, this is what we do. Left click, right click, left click, magically, it becomes a detection. That detection then gets moved into a workflow. This is standard digitized workflow, but I want to walk you through it quickly. You have different types of targets that are identified on the left there. Every single column produces a different type of decision-making process. Once you have that decision and you're trying to actually action that process, we now move into COA generation, course of action generation, where we are automatically, via a number of factors, trying to identify what the best asset to prosecute a target looks like. Once we've got the different approaches and we select one, we then can move directly into how do we action that target. So we've gone from identifying the target to now coming up with a course of action to now actioning that target, all from one system. This is revolutionary. We were having this done in about 8 or 9 systems where humans were literally moving detections left and right in order to get to our desired end state, in this case, actually closing a kill chain.
See, Palantir is that platform that unifies all of the AI. That's what Palantir, that's the purpose of it. It's take all these various systems, like Larry Ellison was talking about, and unify them into one source that can be accessed. I'm just thinking of so many different ways to parody what we were just watching. Because on one hand, it's just like, it's so sophisticated, and they're just like, you select this, select the item, move out to the metric, change the different, AI considerations, that gives you an answer, and then it's just like, you cut to a missile just flying into an elementary school. It's just like, okay, very sophisticated stuff. No, it's very impressive. I'm very impressed. No, I had no idea to go in through the window like that, right? The little kids, that was amazing. Or just everything that you're seeing, and it's the satellite view with the tracer over it, and it's just like Tucker Carlson fishing. And they're just like, he's just zooming in on him and like, cross-referencing his activity, and it's just, bloop, doop, 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 doop. Hunting down anti-Semites will never be easier unless you're using Palantir, a fully unified total control system to make sure everybody shuts the hell up about what we're doing. It's incredible, isn't it? Should we go quickly to Alex Karp here, our good friend Alex Karp? Let's go to clip number 7. I haven't actually seen this one yet, but I expect it to be entertaining. Here's Alex Karp, CEO of Palantir, the incredibly powerful AI super villain company. Here he is, I guess, being very reasonable. I don't know. I haven't seen this yet. So I guess this is him being very reasonable and understanding about criticisms of his insane tyrannical company. Let's watch.
Conspiracy theorists, you may hate this, but there's one person protecting your right to be a conspiracy theorist that actually has a seat at the table, and that person is me. You may not want to hear that truth, but it is fucking true, yeah. And maybe do a little more reading before you pontificate on your absurd and obviously ill-informed and many times stupid opinions. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, cause like, you're attacking the person who's protecting you, idiot. It's like fucking so stupid.
Again, it's like, who are you protecting? What rights are you protecting? You're gathering all of our data into a centralized control system so you can work with the likes of Larry Ellison and Shlomo Kramer to silence anybody that disagrees with you, and we're supposed to thank you? Well, thank you for protecting us from the thoughts that we don't like. Thank you for protecting Europe from the far right, like you've taken credit for. Thank you for protecting Europe from people who want remigration. Thank you for allowing Europe to be completely dominated and taken over by Muslims, you absolute psychopath, weirdo, schizo, retard. He's like, this guy is in charge of like the most powerful company in the world, and he's tweaking like a freaking idiot. And by the way, he's like, the conspiracy theorists, we're protecting you. And then another one, they're like, what do you say about the people who criticize Palantir? And he's like, I'd like to weaponize drones to spray fentanyl-laced urine on them. Oh, but he's the one protecting us, and we're supposed to thank him for the pleasure of being subject to his digital panopticon. I think Alex Karp should be deported. I think he can take Palantir with him. I think the whole thing needs to be hit with a giant, radioactive wave from the sun so we can be free from these absolute outrageous tyrants who feel like they should be thanked for tyrannizing us. Like that their activity of brutally murdering children in Iran is somehow protecting us from danger. You're the danger, scumbag, and we all know it.
As InfoWars not delivered. In Gladiator, he chops up the first 4 guys when they throw him in the ring, or in the arena, and he says, "Are you not entertained?
Are you not entertained?"
Well, I would say to you, are you not satisfied? Have we not delivered in the fight against the globalists? You bet on the right horse, and I'm asking you to continue to bet on us as the InfoWar continues on, regardless, as we refuse to submit to the tyrants.
But the reason this is such a win-win or a non-zero-sum game or a 360 win, the term I coined over a decade ago, is because everybody participating supports freedom, supports the fight against tyrants, the fight for team humanity, against the globalists, and you get incredible products at the same time. So if you haven't tried Ultramethylene Blue or our bovine colostrum or our CMOS or our Shilajit, these are all incredible products available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And if you're going to buy anything on the site, you become a VIP for $30 a month, cancel any time for free, and instantly $40 is put in your account. The second you click in a VIP, when it recurs each month, instantly $40 goes in. So you make $10 to spend on top of the $30 you spend. Special deals, special offers, and with one click of your profile, you cancel anytime for free. So it's a very light commitment, and you get special deals on everything else. So anybody buying anything on thealexjonesstore.com should be a VIP, so make sure you do that. You have until the 17th of March to take advantage of the March mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. This is one of the biggest sales of the year yet. Up to 40% off store-wide. 25% off on the shirts, on the hats. 10% off on things like the collectible knives. And up to 40% off on supplements like Ultramethylene Blue. And the more you buy, the more you save. So take advantage of the March Mega Sale right now. Run until the 17th at thealexjonesstore.com and be the reason we'll always stay on the air. Again, I salute you and thank you. Take action now.